It's time for Windows Weekly. Richard Campbell's here. Paul Thurrott's here. We've got that big Microsoft hack. Seems like Microsoft might be downplaying something pretty embarrassing, frankly. New versions of Windows 11 for beta and dev channels. We'll talk about AI. Paul used Copilot Pro, and not for programming, but some pretty cool images. We'll show that. Plus, Paul's favorite browsers and Richard's favorite Japanese whiskey. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell, episode 865, recorded Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. You don't drink the bottle. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Melissa, the data quality expert since 1985. Melissa offers free trials, sample codes, and flexible pricing, plus an ROI guarantee and unlimited technical support to customers all over the world. Melissa's international address validation cleans and corrects street addresses worldwide. Addresses automatically transliterate from one system to another, for example, from Chinese to Cyrillic. Download the free Melissa Lookups app on Google Play or in the App Store. No sign-up required. You can use it to validate an address or personal identity in the U.S. or Canada. Check global phone numbers to find caller, carrier, and geographic information. You can even check global IP address information and more. And that's free on the app stores. Melissa has achieved the highest level of security status available by gaining FedRAMP authorization. Now, I know those technologies are exclusively for governmental agencies, but everybody who uses Melissa automatically gains this superior level of security. Melissa's solutions and services are GDPR and CCPA compliant and meet SOC 2 and HIPAA high trust standards for information security management. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free when you start at melissa.com/twit. That's Melissa, MELISSA.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly. Oh, hello, winners. Hello, dozers. Hello, Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, leanpub.com. Great to see you, my friend, in the frozen tundra of...
I am clenching my body in a vain attempt to be warm right now, literally.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
I'm probably going to go grab the sheet off the cover off the bed and just
yikes
curl up.
Yeah, get a blanket. It would be cute to good. See you wrapped in a blanket.
No. Also, it's not. We're not far.
Also not here, far. It's Richard Campbell, who is on the West Coast. It's probably fairly balmy in Mad Park.
We had a snow burst, very unusual to get snow here. It made it all the way to the coast, right to the waterline.
Wow.
Enough that we had to shovel it off and stuff, but it's all gone now. It rained and rained and rained, and now it's just wet.
I learned a lesson last week in Providence. It snowed, and then it rained, and then it froze. And the lesson I learned was, shovel ye snow while ye may.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Get it off the steps for sure, and then mainly get it out of the driveway, because I was driving over a hump of snow for the rest of the of not
slid
even snow,
off
of,
the car
of ice. Yeah, because there was like a dune. Fortunately, I had a four-wheel drive, so I felt like I was off-roading in my driveway, my mom's driveway. So I guess it's time
my
to talk.
My car actually slipped out on the highway last Friday night.
Oh, no,
I guess
that's terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah, it was not good. You know, I'm pretty experienced when it comes to driving in the snow, and that was a little surprising.
Was it ice?
I guess it was one of the, you know, it's Pennsylvania, Leo. So we don't really plow here, per se, until it's unnecessary.
Oh, that's so hysterical.
It really isn't. The lane I was in was not plowed or not, hadn't been used as much, so it wasn't as bare.
Yikes. That's terrifying.
Just, it's not good.
I remember when I was a kid, my dad driving me to school, and there was a hill, and he basically lost control at the top of the hill. We just kind of gently slid the way down the hill, hoping that we wouldn't hit
it. My brother almost got decapitated by a snowplow one time for that exact reason. The snowplow went flying down the hill.
Yikes.
Yikes.
People die all the time.
The entire top of the car was literally severed. Like, he ducked.
Yikes.
Like, he then had a convertible.
My third grade teacher, Mrs. Kelly, lost her husband to a snowplow accident in the 60s.
Boy. That's some
And then, scary. And I was telling my sister about it, and she said, I'm sure that doesn't happen anymore. And the very next day, a woman died in East Providence from a snowplow. It's dangerous. Because partly is they're in a hurry. So they're whizzing down.
They can't see anything.
These blades. Yeah.
It's the size of a house, and the little thing they're sitting in is like, it's like a little tiny thing. You know?
And then they put sand and salt. There's another thing I learned. My car, this rental car, thank God, was covered with salt.
Yeah.
No, this is the experience, Leo. I'm sorry. It's just it's what we got.
How do you people do it?
How do we survive?
How do you
I'll tell you, if it's Rhode Island.
Why do you think we keep buying Californian cars?
They keep pushing the salt into the bay there, you know, which is environmentally unsound.
Oh, there's a giant salt mound in between Providence and Cranston where my mom lived.
Yeah. These are all over the East Coast.
Yeah. There's gigantic.
It's like a beehive kind of thing.
And I guess that's where they get the road salt, huh? Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about Microsoft. This is much more interesting. Microsoft was hacked. Right.
Yes, they were. Mm-hmm. In the most low-tech way imaginable.
A password spray.
I love that. It makes it seem like we're trying to make this sounds, somehow sophisticated. Here's how you prevent that. Disallow attempts after 3.
Yeah.
I mean, like, seriously?
Or have a good password.
Or maybe 2FA or something,
And then they said, to dignify it, they said, but it was a nation state.
I mean, I appreciate that kind of disclosure, but...
I'm surprised by it, really.
Yeah, I think there's no way this isn't embarrassing. So Microsoft, the language they used was, well, this was a legacy system, it was like it wasn't their fault.
It was in the
it's
corner.
It's your legacy system.
Collecting dust.
We go to you.
It was
for
a
security.
Legacy system that had permissions, apparently, to access the email servers and read everybody's
email. I'm just not convinced that this is what happened, right? This seems more like they were able to read emails from corporate accounts. Not that they actually, like you say, access. It's like, I think they had access to an email account for this test account, and there were.
It had
senior people
email.
On an email.
Yeah. That's attachments to the email, right?
Well, of course they would.
Yeah. So here are the troubling bits of this, aside from what we've already said, right? Nation state. Okay, scary. Mm-hmm. They got through with a password spray attack. Like Bob was sitting there going, ABC123, ABC124. What is that? They also, the language is always, it's a very small percentage of Microsoft corporate email accounts. What?
The big ones,
We only
though.
Need two or three
yeah,
of them.
They
we
got
need
the big ones,
right?
Yeah.
And then supposedly this hacker group was there specifically to learn what Microsoft knew about it.
Well, they
for 3 months,
they think, and I don't know how they would know. Yeah. They were in there for 3 months, right? They think, I don't know how they would know that it was Nobelium. I'm sorry. Now they call it what? Winter Blizzard or something.
Winter Blizzard. Yeah. Midnight Blizzard.
Midnight Blizzard. Who was looking.
That's the next company that Microsoft acquires, by the way. Midnight
They were the Solar Winds guys, right? So they think that they were looking to figure out what Microsoft, at least this is what Gibson said yesterday, what Microsoft knew about them. So they were it was counterintelligence kind of a thing.
Yep. It was counter a lot of things. So Microsoft in November, in a bit of really good timing, announced their Secure Future Initiative, right? This kind of modern version of trustworthy computing where because of AI and the sophisticated nature of cyber attacks today, they really need to step up and, among other things, use AI to combat the AI being used to attack them. This had nothing to do with AI, like nothing. It was literally a brute force, like nonsense attack that should not have succeeded against someone with a Hotmail account. But... it did. And now what Microsoft is saying.
Once you know that test account doesn't have MFA on it, now what you're doing is you're harnessing a bunch of zombie machines all coming from different IPs.
Yep.
So the three password thing still can work. It's just it is killing off IPs. But it's Midnight Blizzard. They've got 100,000 of these. So they're able to test a lot fast.
Right.
Right. The real thing here is where's the machine learning model looking at it and going, wow, 10,000 people have tried to access this account in the past minute. That doesn't seem normal.
Just 2007 era corporate reporting tools. Yeah. Here's an idea. Why don't we, if only we had software that could pull the machines in our organization and report back the level of, OS version, service pack version, whatever. Yeah. I mean, this problem was solved 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? That's what's embarrassing.
These rolling security improvements don't apply evenly. They found an old account against an old server that isn't in compliance, and it still had rights, which is the real issue here. It's like, if you're not in compliance, why does it have any rights at all?
So there is something we can all learn from this, and that is to not use Microsoft software. No.
Harsh, dude.
No, we've been talking about security here and there lately, and I know no one listening or watching this is going to go to the extent that, say, Richard did when he literally went through all of his accounts, changed the passwords, closed accounts that were no longer necessary, et cetera. But really, this is an example of the need to monitor this occasionally and kind of reduce your attack surface, right? You can't reduce your attack surface by adding 2FA, I guess, but, by doing what I just said, which is, remove the accounts you don't need, literally get rid of them, and shore up the accounts you do have, and we all do this, that this is like literally 100% of us have accounts sitting out, except for Richard, I think, have accounts sitting out there in the world that are unprotected or not protected enough, that have the same password as 17 other accounts or 107, whatever it is.
I am at none of those left. Finally.
No, you are literally a god among men when it comes to this, and many things, frankly.
But I would also say I do get an email from one thing or another almost every day of somebody asking for my password. Right. Like,
nice. Constantly.
Well, if they ask nicely, I think that's the key.
Facebook routinely tells me, we're trying to recover your password for you. If this is not you, press.
Yeah. Literally got two of those the other day.
Yeah. It happens all the time. And it's just I'm kind of grateful because it's a reminder. People are trying all the time.
I mean, look, we all have our thresholds for pain and effort and time and all that kind of stuff. But the more you can go passwordless via secure methods like 2FA, whatever, the better. And obviously start with the low hanging fruit, your accounts, the online accounts like Microsoft account, Google account, Apple account, the ones that are tied to credit cards like Amazon and all that stuff. I mean, this is just, it's grunt work and no one wants to do it, but this is why you do it.
Am I crazy or I feel like I'm just waiting for passkeys to have some massive vulnerability.
I went through I still think passkeys are kind of the future, whatever that means, in that they will exist with other methods for, passwordless authentication and verification. But based on the feedback I've gotten from my own readers, I got to tell you, this is maybe too complicated for people. And part of the problem
doesn't work all the
time it's inconsistently implemented.
It's frustrating. Yes.
Yeah. It's inconsistently implemented on the same account on different devices.
Of everything it's that you very can frustrating. Do that's genuinely important that will make a difference for you, it's a password manager.
Yeah.
Because it actually makes your life better. Yeah, all the pass keys and things are harder to use. The fact that I don't know any of my passwords is a joy.
Yes.
Right. Like it's genuinely a joy.
I feel like I'm old school, but the best thing would be a password manager and 2FA. And that's damn secure, I would think.
Password manager that uses 2FA, so you can
authenticate. No, I don't want the 2FA in the same spot. So I use a
separate. No. That you need it to get into it.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. I use to get into my
My. But the hard work is actually going through all your accounts and changing all your.
Yeah, that's the part where people put on the brake. I don't think so.
Most password managers will tell you.
Yeah,
these are the same. You've got these same passwords. Here's how you change it.
I'm literally going to be writing about this soon. I kind of expected to do it by now, but last weekend, one of the many things I did was to go Bitwarden, like all these password managers. Here are your accounts that have been compromised in some way. They've shown up wherever. Here are your passwords that you reuse everywhere. 129 of them. or whatever. It's horrible, and it's one of those things we all have to kind of confront. So I spent the time. To go, I only had less than a dozen. And when you kind of cut out the ones that were like local 192 addresses that were just from my NAS or something, there were only a couple I really wanted to deal with. And one was like Conde Nast, which is, I guess I signed into a travel site at some point in the past. And I actually ended up contacting
that company. Or you're reading Vogue, one or the other.
It's probably not that one. I mean, I'm just guessing. But
I have an endless
I contacted them to
them.
Okay. But I contacted them to close the account. I said, look, just I can't get in. So please close this. And they said, we have no record of you ever you having exist. An account with us. And I said, that's interesting because the dark web has a record of it. And, you know, I'd like that to be gone. The other one was Thrifty Car Rental, where I literally spent an agonizing hour trying to change my password, which is nearly impossible because their website is horrible.
Yeah.
And I actually eventually did get it done. But that's those are two accounts. And so when you kind of extrapolate that out to what it would take to, you know, really clean up the whole thing.
Yeah.
We're talking about this is a career, you know, and look, I wanted
it. It scratched a nice obsessive itch for me. But, you know, I was also the person who opened Notepad and blocked out an hour a day and would just plow on them for a while. And if I was in the groove, I'd keep going.
Yep.
But it still took a few weeks. To do them all.
No, it's and
for you though.
This is the central problem with anything security related. A, it's complex. B, it's time consuming and tedious. And people just give up. Yeah. Even the ones who are like, you know, you're right. I got to do this. You start, and then you're like, I'm gonna go watch Married with Children instead.
You know what else works on this browser? Cat videos.
Yeah. Exactly. It's. There's no easy solution. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Actually, is this
I'm looking at Bitwarden and it says 583 logins.
Yeah.
Well,
you mean that you're storing there?
That are in Bitwarden. Now, admittedly, that's a lot of like internal server stuff and so forth too, but it is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of accounts.
Yeah.
It's hundreds. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, it's you're right. It's worth doing. It's something everyone should do. It's something no one is going to do. And I mean, not like literally no one, but like
very
sub 1%.
You could at least do the ones that really count, like your bank accounts, right?
And at least
that's kind of my point.
Yeah. And get started with all your new accounts.
And yes, right. And always use it from now on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, I suppose you could go from account to account in Bitwarden or whatever tool you're using and just change the account, have it generate a complex password, a new password. And like you said, don't know your passwords. Never be able to type in the password for anything.
Don't know it. Don't know what it is. It's 25 characters long, or if it's a really crappy site, 16 characters long. Yeah. There's lots of crappy sites.
Do what you can do, you know?
Yeah. But you know, enjoy being the person who always has the password that's the longest because I never type it. Never, ever type it. I don't know what it is.
And if, you know, if Microsoft's listening, I would just give you the same advice. I mean, 2FA when you can do it, complex passwords. It's just common sense, guys. You know,
But admittedly,
secure those legacy systems.
You know, the line they left out of here was how old that test account was. And I presume they left it out because it probably wasn't that old.
It was
a test account from 2003. I don't feel that bad.
Yeah, we still have a legacy Hotmail server running for some reason. And the account name is admin. Really?
Don't worry. Mm-hmm. Wait till you know, find out what the password is.
Yeah, there is no password. It's like running off a Linksys router from 1999 or whatever.
It's a big organization with a huge long legacy of stuff. And this is not, you know, this is not a thing we're ever going to show anybody. It's just internal. So I'm just doing something quick and then it sticks around for a bit too long. Yeah, and ta-da. Right.
What's your guess? Was it a server? Was it a somebody's closet?
Yeah.
Was it in Satya Nadella's closet?
Actually, that's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
No, I think it was a test account that was supposed to be internal only that got exposed when in a second iteration of something.
Yeah, they're like, why can't I access the internet? Click checkbox and not understanding.
And forget that you put a trivial password on that.
That's right. Yeah, because you were just testing.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure it was something like
just
that.
Just testing.
But this is where your size works against you.
Yep.
In Microsoft's case, it's just, I mean, this organization is impossibly vast.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's the great thing about that Brad Smith announcement in November about the future thing. As much as they made it public, it's for them. You know, they've got the problem too. And the reason to make it public is A, now you can't take it back. And B, it's also a statement. We are dog fooding our own problem.
Yeah. Right. Hey, you want someone with experience, you know?
Yeah.
And this is one way you get it. Get punched in the face a few times.
The SIEM part, right? The security detection mechanisms that whole, which is very big for us these days as administrators, like, are we, because often after the breach becomes visible, you know, when the big red screen comes up or whatever it may be, Then you go back and look through the logs. You go, oh, yeah, there they were. And they were here and they were here. Like, why didn't we see this ahead of time? And it's because it's scattered in all these different places. And this is, you know, Microsoft's product called Sentinel. Is about trying to consolidate that data in a way that gives you a better sense that something inappropriate.
Pull apart the disparate pieces of data and draw those connections.
Yeah. But there isn't any one thing that happened. Like, you know, you talk about the three strikes and you're out kind of thing. Like, maybe they'd actually have been pulling that account for a year.
Right.
Right. They only hit it
waiting
every
the amount of time before they could try again.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe. To never trip over any of those
maybe
lines.
Maybe someday we'll get in here. Oh, look, we did.
And when eventually they do.
Yeah, maybe.
I think probably, though, because it's the SolarWinds group, and I'm giving Microsoft credit that they actually know that. I'm not sure that they would know that.
Yeah.
But then it would make sense if they're trying to figure out what do they know about SolarWinds. That they've probably been hanging around for a while, right?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure. But I'm also surprised that Microsoft simply named names and called it out as a state actor. Well, that, you know, it's like, this is Russian.
That kind of, again, all of the language in that blog post was,
well,
kind of hand waving to say, oh, no, this was like really terrible. From
that's why they succeeded. Like, it's more important to show that they were powerful.
They were powerful. I mean, wasn't
well. Okay, hold on a second. I don't think they were trying to imply that Russia hacked Microsoft. I think they were trying to say that this hacker group, which is supported by the country of Russia, government of Russia, was trying to find more information about what Microsoft knew about them.
Well, they said a nation state hacker. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. A nation state hacker and Russia.
Backed by a nation state. Yeah.
Yeah. They said all of those things. So, yeah. And normally they used to be coy about this. Like, generally, nation state was language for it's either Russia or China, but we're not going to say.
Right.
Yeah. This time they just said. Like, all that was missing was the airstrike statement that followed it. By the way, we're a $3 trillion company with an annual revenue greater than the GDP of 150 nations. Right. And here come our F-16 JDAMs.
You know, that's what Microsoft needs.
Their own Air Force?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Microsoft strikes Iran will be a story in the future.
In the days of the East India Company, they had a naval force. You know,
sure. Well, how many bunker busters do you think Microsoft has?
Well, and all they really, all they need to do is take out one building in St. Petersburg.
I don't know. We're joking.
This is not the job of a corporation.
I do find the language of this very interesting. They were talking, for example, they were saying, you know, just don't worry about this was not caused by a vulnerability in one of our products. No, it was just caused by stupidity.
Yes.
Like, but that's a good thing
because
stupidity.
It can't be repeated. You know, it can't be repeated uniformly, right?
Well, it's also a good thing because it won't cascade out to Microsoft's customers.
But they did say we're going to be better, right? I mean, they said this has triggered an examination of our processes and.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So, like I said, back in November, they announced this Secure Future Initiative, the new trustworthy computing thing. What they said about that was, you know, look, we know that when we implement this, it's going to be disruptive. Right. And we've been purposefully kind of taking the slow boat on that. And now we're thinking, actually, we're going to have to be aggressive, even knowing that this will disrupt things.
Yeah, but the implication was disruptive to our customers. Here, it's disruptive to us because we like having those insecure systems lying around, or we can't figure out where they are or something.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an internal system, right? Or do you think this might have been a customer system?
No, it was just totally.
And
again, and the email explanations are so vague and the press has all made it worse. Like, you got to go back and read the Microsoft ones. Yep. I don't think they had access to the, you know, they weren't impersonating any executive email or anything like that.
Yeah, I think your interpretation makes more sense. They had an email inbox that stuff was getting forwarded to.
You don't draw attention to yourself. You just sit back and watch. Sit and
read the mail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Sit back, go out.
The thing is, it took them months.
Here's
what's going to come out. There will be some, there is going to be more information, right? Part of it will be, actually, maybe they hit more systems than we thought, access more emails than we thought.
You're totally right. It's like, and did they try any laterals? Like, that's always the question. Yeah. Did they actually have control of a machine at any point? Doesn't sound like it. It sounds like literally they got access to an email box and they were reading.
That makes sense.
I don't know that they had a single thing beyond that.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know. Yeah, we don't know. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah. That's interesting.
It was somewhat stunning, I have to say, in this day and age to see Microsoft to succumb to something so unsophisticated.
Well, and it's what's going to get you. I would also point out they did disclose it.
Yes. Don't they have to? Are they legally required to? No, because no customer facing information was
right. Right. And even then,
this is their policy. I mean, I would say, look,
good
this
on
is
them
the,
for that, by the way, that's good.
This is the same kind of attack that took down the Death Star in Star Wars, right? You know, you expect the sophisticated
there's always
attacks.
Event somewhere.
You know, you don't expect the wombat sized hull, and that's not going to be a problem.
There were womp rats.
Womp rats.
Yeah. Wombats are much better.
Sorry.
A womp rat's pretty big, actually.
Yeah. I used to hit those back at home. Yeah. Anyway, it's weird. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You can read the post at Microsoft.com in their blog, MSRC, Microsoft Security Research something. I don't know.
Microsoft Security Research Center, I think, MSRC.
Yeah. And the headline even says, by nation-state actor Midnight Blizzard.
Nation-state actor, not nation-state, right? It is a known actor.
Yeah, Russian state-sponsored actor known as Nebelium.
Yeah, yeah. But not necessarily acting on behalf of Russia, right? That's the thing. We don't actually know that.
It just sounded like it was the hacking group trying to find stuff for themselves.
Yeah,
by all descriptions.
Although we do have to read between the lines on this. I mean, we just.
Yeah, right. We have to.
Totally.
Yeah.
Anyway, there will be more. So I think we'll be talking about this again in a month or two whenever they come back and, provide more information.
Yeah, be interesting to see if they do. Or they're just like, hey, the matter's been dealt with.
Right.
Use a password spray attack to compromise a legacy non-production test tenant account and gain a foothold and then I don't know if this is what you think, Richard. Use the account's permissions.
I think that sounds exactly like we said. I think it's a VM. It's sitting out on, it just shouldn't have been connected bidirectionally to the internet. Yeah.
But access an email account, what does that really mean? Yeah. Do you think they log in on these different accounts? They use more passwords? It doesn't seem likely.
Then use the account's permissions to access a very small percentage of Microsoft corporate email accounts.
Right.
Yeah, it's unclear, isn't it?
It just seems more likely if you're just reading.
Would you say that the SLT at Microsoft represents a very small percentage of Microsoft employees?
Yes, it's tiny. Tiny.
I would say it's tiny. It's tiny. It is literally tiny.
Like 1/10 of 1/1000 of 1%.
Well, tiny relative tiny. To what?
Yeah, but it's the right percentage, though. That's the point.
Yeah, exactly.
But we have no evidence of that. Yeah, I don't even know.
There's no way to know, but they did specifically say executives, right? Yeah. So it's not just employees.
Yeah. But this means if you read an email from Scott Guthrie and it had an internal only PowerPoint attachment on it.
Right.
Yeah.
You got it. Right.
Yeah. So I feel like they would have downplayed that further if they could have. For example, yes, there were Microsoft executive emails in there, but they were things that were sent out to large groups of employees that might have indicated to someone that the account they got into was pretty low level and didn't have access to decision making threads.
But bet that this was a legacy test account? It might have been even part of attack testing or resilience testing, like that kind of thing. It was related to hacking, and that's why it was on the mailing lists related to hacking.
Hopefully what it was a person who was now a Microsoft executive, who at the time was a low-level employee and had no idea what they were doing. And it's, Scott G or it's Satya Nadella or someone. It's like, look where they are now. We have much more access than we might have otherwise.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. That's great.
No, no one does.
Anyway.
Okay.
I hesitate to cast
we beat that to death.
Stones because we all live in glass houses.
Yeah, totally. It's just that we really hope that their house has got the best windows going.
You would hope.
Because we are all betting a lot on it.
Yeah.
Their house is the size of Mars.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
Fair.
We cannot compare Microsoft's response to this to what I would do as an individual. My God, of course they should be held to a different standard.
Yeah.
I
remember going. I went drinking with a sysadmin from Microsoft who was involved in SharePoint migration. He was moving internal SharePoint sites up. Yeah, now we ended up doing a show around it, but the scope of what he's talking about. Oh, I moved 35,000 SharePoint sites over 6 months, and what? Listen, the scale of things is crazy.
To put this in perspective, I'm doing this photo project where I'm consolidating everything. I'm doing great. But one of the reasons I'm doing great is as you get like 3 months into it, you're like, you know what? I'm going to stop worrying so much about duplicates. I'm going to, you know,
maybe a little softer.
We're just going to move it along. Like, I just want to get this thing done. And I think that happens with anything, any big project, right? I mean, so everyone goes in with the best of intentions.
And you hit walls.
Yeah. Yeah.
And idealism fades with time.
That's exactly. Exactly.
I will never use a product from a company whose CEO is a jerk.
Well, I got bad news for you, buddy.
They're all jerks.
That's everybody. Bad news. Bad news. You can't use any products.
You can use our products. Our CEO is not a jerk. She's quite nice.
I mean in big tech.
I must say.
I don't mean
fondness for our CEO.
Yeah, I do too. Yes. I didn't mean it like that. No, I meant in big tech specifically.
No, I know what you're talking about.
I just don't trust Microsoft, you know.
Okay, well, good luck out there in the world. Facebook's great, so you'll have no problems there.
Mark Zuckerberg, what a sweetie. What a sweetie. Look, geez,
he's the best. He's never copied anyone, unlike Microsoft. You know what I'm saying?
Such a sweet guy.
He's not known for that.
We got more to talk about. We will in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsor, if you don't mind, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is really timely. Our sponsor for the segment of Windows Weekly is Kolide, K-O-L-I-D-E. You know, they actually liken their service to going to the airport. You know, when you go to the airport, there's two steps of authentication. You prove you are who you say you are to the TSA agent, and then they scan your luggage. But in most enterprises today, they got the first part down, but the luggage goes right through. Your equipment goes right through. The thing I like about Kolide is it makes the end users part of your team. What do you call an endpoint security product that works perfectly but makes users miserable? And you know there are a lot of those. A failure. A failure. The old approach to endpoint security, lock down employee devices, rollout changes through forced restarts, things like that. But it just doesn't work. IT's miserable because they got a mountain of support tickets. Employees are miserable, so they start using their personal devices. No security on there. What could possibly go wrong? Executives, they're the worst. They opt out the first time it makes them late for a meeting. They say, I'm not going to use that. No. You want something better. You can't have a successful security implementation unless you work with end users, and that's where Kolide comes in. Kolide is designed for companies that use Okta. So that's the user verification stuff. But then Kolide ensures that their devices are also secure. And what's cool is it's a user-first solution. It notifies the user as soon as it detects an issue on their device, teaches them how to solve it, makes them part of your team. IT gets offloaded. They don't have to do all that work. The user feels good. I'm helping. And they're learning. You know, you got to turn on that firewall. You can't leave your SSH keys in the download folder, things like that. Untrusted devices are blocked from authentication, but users don't stay blocked because they fix it. Kolide, designed for companies with Okta, works on macOS, it works on Windows, Linux, mobile devices, doesn't even have to use MDM, so it can even work on BYOD devices or that laptop your CEO borrowed from his kids so he could work without security. It works everywhere. If you have Okta and you're looking for a device trust solution that also respects your team, makes them part of your defense, visit Kolide.com/WW. Watch a demo today. See how it works. K-O-L-I-D-E. Kolide.com/WW. We thank them so much for the support of Windows Weekly. Now, back we go to our esteemed team. Oh,
something. I just realized exciting. I forgot to look at something. So yesterday was patch two. No, it wasn't. It was week D.
Right.
And Microsoft did release a preview update, and I didn't even look at it.
Why'd you install it now while the show's going on?
I will.
Well, I mean, what could go wrong?
Yeah. I think the better question is what couldn't go wrong? But anyway, it has been kind of quiet in the Windows world lately. Since our last show, we've had a couple of Windows Insider builds. Beta channel, channeling my inner Bostonian.
Get on your beta channel there.
Yeah, is testing USB 80 gigabyte support, which is probably going to be called USB 4 version 2 because seriously, what's up with these brands?
Speaking of which.
No, yeah.
My sister told me, she works at RISD, the Rhode Island School of Design.
Yep.
She said that Peter Griffith, the guy in Family Guy, is actually based on the former security guy at RISD, big, heavy guy. Everybody loved.
Because that guy grew up in the area. My friends and I are very upset that we didn't do what he did and just make a TV show or whatever about this area or that area.
Yeah. Quahogs. Yeah,
because that's what people are like there. They're ridiculous. But yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if the guy's still there, but he was beloved, but he could always brought donuts. just like a certain
would do it.
Family Guy. I'm talking here.
I don't know. Where did that come from? Oh, because I did the Boston thing.
Oh, yeah. Why did I throw that?
I'm like, how did we get to that?
Meaningless piece of junk.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I love following the chain, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's
what we're doing. You gotta understand why I'm acting.
I met some guys in a bar the other night, and they were like, you can't be from Boston. And I said, you know, one time I was talking, and I could see someone giving me the hairy eyeball. I'm like, what? He goes, you know, you could do a really good version of the ask not what your country could do for your speech.
Not.
And I decided at that time, first of all, I said that guy did not have a Boston accent. Screw you. And secondly, maybe I need to work on that. And because I think it sounds dumb, frankly. I mean,
I like your accent. No.
It's a little.
Joe, both of you, it kind of would come out at. And me too, by the way.
Yeah, we get tired or drink too much. Yeah,
I say things like orange instead of orange. My wife makes fun of me. Or I say room. You're in your room, right? She says it's
the one I this is not so much an accent, but the way people talk there, I have this example where I went to a sandwich shop and he said, we ain't got no vinegar.
Jeez.
And I'm like, I can see it on the shelf. He says, we ain't got no vinegar. And I'm like, dude. And he goes, you want me to crush some vinegar chips on there for you? And I'm like, you know what? No, I think I will I'll put that on at home. Thanks. Thanks a lot,
man.
Yep. They're brutal. He's brutal.
Ain't got no vinegar.
Ain't got no vinegar. You want me? I like the. It's a great offer.
You're selling it right here. Problem. I'll buy it and give it to you, and you could put it on. No, okay. Anywho, I've been fighting, you know, stupidity with common sense my whole life and losing every time. So whatever. Anyway, SP80 up. So and then in the dev channel, they're testing a couple things that are kind of interesting, like. Commercial version of Teams meeting integration and Start. And what that means is you'll open the Start menu and there's a recommended section at the bottom. And if it's within an hour of a meeting, it will actually pop up as an icon there and say, hey, you have a meeting in 17 minutes or whatever. Which, you know, I guess if you look at the Start menu a lot, it's kind of interesting, but that's cool. And then the other interesting thing is August, September, I think, Microsoft announced that they were testing a feature called Remote Capture, which will be part of PhoneLink, right? And the idea here is that you can, I almost said idea, keep doing it, sorry, and I'm not that tired, but, you know, one of those phone, Android phone to Windows integration type things. 23H2 came and went. This feature never appeared. It looked like it was supposed to be part of that. And then what we found out since then is that they've actually replaced it with something new that involves three different pieces. There's a new mobile devices interface and settings. There's a software update that comes from the store called Device Experience Host. We're starting to deliver a lot of, system components from the store now, right? Just to get them out there quickly. And then banner notifications in Windows 11 that fire whenever you take a photo or a screenshot on your phone. So in other words, you're sitting there and you're like, I take a screenshot. And maybe the reason you're doing that is because you want it on your Windows computer and it just pops right up and click it and get it immediately without having to go through the rigmarole of either attaching it to the, USB and downloading it that way or going into PhoneLink and, you know, trying to find this screenshot there. So whatever, that's cool. They're just testing it. It's not, you know, it's still dev channel, still pretty far out. So it could ship in, I don't know, 3 days using a new schedule. I'm just going to spin the wheel and see what happens. I don't know. No one can say.
I know you're being a little sarcastic. I think
I'm getting a little beat up on the update.
A little snarky,
And then we have this is a couple of related items here. Zach again over at Windows Central says he's heard that we might have a Surface event in March. This makes total sense to me. We have a laptop and Pro update waiting in the wings. The part of this that doesn't make sense to me is he says there might be two waves of updates for both products where we get you know, Intel 14th gen, whatever, right away. And then in the fall, they might actually rub them again for whatever comes out, you know, post whatever it's called. What's the next one? Arrow Lake, I think, that whatever the 15th gen will be called. Okay. I mean, I guess so. I don't know. But we are overdue on these products. So, yeah, I mean, a spring event makes sense. So we'll see.
Cool.
There are companies fighting this new DMA regulation in the EU, arguing that their products are not dominant enough to be held to this higher standard. Obviously, things like Windows and iOS do not necessarily fall into that category, but these companies also have products that do. So, for example, Microsoft, Bing, and Edge were provisionally on the list, and they basically went out and said, look, if you don't agree with this, tell us why. And Microsoft came back and said,
they're not
these products.
Product.
Nobody uses these things. So, according, I think it was Bloomberg wrote a report basically that the EU is going to find it. Yeah, they're not dominant products, so they're not going to be subject to this regulation. So
yeah, they're not. So they're not really, is it a dominant company? Right. Like I was going to play the whole game of I thought the browser was integral to the operating system. Didn't that what Microsoft used to say?
Yes, it is. In fact, they marketed that very heavily. So they did not. It still is, by the way. I mean, there's still interest. And I don't mean like at a technical level. But yeah, there are. Yeah, there are. There really are. I mean, there are. As much as I can't stand Microsoft Edge, there are certain.
Anyway, to me, this still feels like they're just playing the game. They were asked for comments, so they push back. Like, let's clarify on.
Yeah, Microsoft or Apple's doing it with iMessage, for example. Mm-hmm. So iMessage is huge in the United States, right? But in Europe, it's actually not that popular. People use WhatsApp or whatever. So. They're pushing back there as well.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. I don't have any issues there.
No, it's almost healthy interaction, right? It's non-litigious interaction about trying to manage the dominance of these products or the, you know, what regulations they want to put on it. Yeah. I mean, all this stuff seems to be working well for the EU.
I'm hoping it will work well for all of us eventually, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. They still seem very willing to split the two.
Right. If my future had gone accordingly, like if COVID had never happened, it's possible I would own a place in Europe somewhere now.
Right.
And I could just take advantage of this by moving to Europe. But Europe is expensive. So I guess you got to kind of weigh the cost.
I'm sure there's a technology product that makes it appear like you're in Europe.
Interesting. I'll look into that. What's it called? Do you have any idea? Are you just guessing?
It's just software. I'm not going to name any brands here, but you know.
I'm going to do everything in French from now on.
There you go. Well, you had a good run this morning with
right. No, I don't mean a French accent. I mean, he was speaking French to me.
I mean, this is poorly, which is ideal for Quebec, right?
Like, it's also ideal for me. Like, you want to offend as many people as possible. It's not like they're sensitive about it.
I mean, I've always found I disagree. Like, I found generally speaking, the French want you to make an attempt at French, and then when it's bad enough, they're like, please speak English. You're hurting my soul.
At least
you tried.
So, and I'm not going to get it right now because I know how to speak properly now. But I would say when I'm in a car in Mexico City, and the guy will say, you know, the Uber driver will say, "Do you speak Spanish?" And I'll say, I can't say it now because I don't know I get it. I know what to say properly now. But I used to say, like, not a little bit, but I would say, like a short, basically. And they would laugh. And that was like the way they knew I didn't speak any Spanish. It was perfect.
Stopped.
Right? We'll just move right to my broken English instead.
You humiliated yourself and communicated the message.
And then I finally figured it out. Delighted. I was like, okay. Yeah. Like I would say un poco. Yeah. Just like, that's not
correct.
Not, that's not right. That's what I said. kind of a late breaking addition. Microsoft just released Microsoft Mesh for Teams. This is that 3D
in our list of bad names, like just another incredibly bad name.
Mesh, for those who don't remember or know, used to be something pretty special. Microsoft had a product called Live Mesh briefly, which in the Ray Ozzie era was a time when he would allow multiple teams to basically ship the same product and let the best one win. So we had, you know, Windows Live Sync was one, and then you know what became SkyDrive and OneDrive and Live Mesh, which was going to become a platform of its own. We weren't just going to sync documents and files; we were going to sync applications. Right? They were going to be mesh applications. It was really compelling at the time, and now it's long gone. And now they're reused because we've run out of words.
It's been a decade. So, holy man! Stops this computer support in 2013. So there you go.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah,
But it was a big deal. You know, briefly. So now Mesh is being reused for this, you know, virtual reality, 3D immersive.
For our legless reality. Okay, great.
Keep your eyes up here, buddy. You don't want to see what's down there because it's nothing and it's going to freak you out. Just saying.
Your shirt just ends.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, that's not good.
Don't understand.
Curiously,
who wants this?
I don't know. And you have to pay extra for it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Who wants this?
I don't know
that you could get them to use it if it was free.
I know.
So, and you're going to pay extra for it. Huh? And it's again, and it's avatars. It's all iconography. So like who are the expressions going to be useful?
There's something to be said for a cartoon representation of you.
Yes.
I don't mean you. I mean of one. I appreciate that on some level. Like, I don't always want to be in front of a camera. But yeah, this kind of goofy virtual world thing, which, you know, Microsoft tried in Windows Mixed Reality and whatever.
And then you've got Horizon World over on Facebook, which just certainly looks derived from. Okay. Right. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. Someone asked about the Apple goggles, right? The Vision Pro. Not that I know of, although Microsoft is allegedly supporting that product with native versions of Teams apps.
Because apparently nobody else is. So that's great. Maybe it will show up.
Yeah. So I don't see any reason why they couldn't do it. So we'll see. Maybe it'll be a WWDC announcement or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't understand how you launch that product finally after these months and not have a roster of apps from known brands. Like, were you just expecting they'd do it?
You do understand it because those name brands freaking hate
Apple. Well, this is the first pushback we've seen. But it's logical, right? I mean, when Apple launches like a watch or an iPad or whatever, people are like, of course I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. People are going to buy this thing. But, you know, $3,500, kind of limited use case.
That's a good point. At most, they could sell 500,000. They probably will.
Yeah.
In that first year, they probably will.
Right.
Although there are many thousands offered on eBay.
So the problem for them, I don't mean to get off on a segue here, but like the problem is that Apple in the past would always achieve some level of success. And this one, it's like, it's enough where even their most devoted developers I don't think they've ever seen pushback like this in the modern era, you know? And the last time someone said no to them was like Adobe with Photoshop on the original Mac OS X, you know?
Yesterday,
it's been a while.
Jason Snell on MacBreak Weekly had, I think, probably the most coherent theory about this, which is Apple knows they need something to replace the iPhone someday. I mean, they can't, you know, they need the next thing.
Yeah, but they can't just throw spaghetti at the wall.
They kind of have to because they can't. First of all, the thing that we want, which is just spectacles, right? Glasses.
Yeah.
The technologies aren't there yet. I mean, they don't have the battery technology. There's all sorts of things missing. But Apple feels like, we gotta get it out there and have people use it. It's going to be a limited number of our most devoted users, but at least we can learn from this learnings.
Yeah, they're going to learn no one needs it. Here's the problem.
I agree.
Flash forward a year, right? So Apple's biggest strength, if you want to put it in one word, is like engagement, right? This is a really engaged audience. They want to spend money. They want to buy product. They'll sign up for services. And I think, this is just an opinion, but I mean, there's a good chance that this product will not receive a level of engagement that Apple's kind of used to.
No, it won't.
You know, frankly, that even those people who buy it, there's going to be a huge percentage.
The real question is how many buy the second one?
How committed Apple is to throwing good money after bad. And are they going to go 10 years with this thing waiting for it to be a hit?
Have they ever?
No.
They've never done that.
No, they haven't. But this is legacy too, right? So maybe, I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens here.
I think at that price point, tapping that most valuable piece of your market, you're going to learn from them. You're going to make a new version of it. And you're going to ask for another $3,500.
I know.
Oh, my God.
They're almost going to have like a trade-in program or a...
Be better. You better.
You
better eat it and get them on the new gear if you're really actually going to make it better.
They can afford it. I mean,
you did this with Apple TV, but it was $100.
The other issue for them is they have a slate of products now that they've been working on for a long time that have come to no fruition whatsoever, like the car and their TV product, not the Apple TV as we know it today, but the actual TV.
No, I like Apple TV to me is a great example of the persistence of Apple because they, three flops in a row? They kept trying. I mean, even no the one watch remembers went all this, over
but
the place.
The beginnings of Apple TV was a product called Front Row, which was a ripoff of, wait for it, folks, Windows Media Center, a software application that ran on the Mac. You know, and then they took that UI, which came from Media Center, think about it, and put it on an actual device called an Apple TV. And now we have an Apple TV app. We've come full circle. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft invented it all with Web TV back in the day.
Yeah, well, Microsoft bought Web TV. So, yeah, that makes sense, actually. that might be truer than I want to admit. That could be. Okay.
Anyway, I did not buy one, but lots of people around here, including Micah Sargent.
My parents had Alex a Web Lindsay. TV.
TV, and a Vision Pro.
So I don't understand how you were able to resist this, Leo. I thought you were sold last week. You were happy to do it.
Going back and forth. I got up. It was, fortunately, I was on the East Coast, so it was 8.
You know what, though? It's not the price, right? It really isn't. If you thought this thing was going to be successful, you would have spent spent that money.
Absolutely.
It's not the price. You would spend that much on a really good MacBook.
I knew exactly what would happen with it. I spent more than that on my M3 MacBook.
You do this and you'd be like, yeah, I'm done.
Exactly. It would sit right next to the Oculus Pro, Rift Pro, that's in my office.
It's an expensive wall trinket or whatever.
Yeah. I wouldn't use it. I know I wouldn't use it. Right. So
I don't know that my HoloLens holds charge at this point.
My head is heavy enough as it is. I don't need anything on it. God, it's like a boulder on a toothpick.
I thought that's why you had such a strong neck, Paul.
I do, yeah. It's like a baby, like supporting his head.
Talk about the greatest market cap in the world.
Well, second greatest.
What, Apple's above $3 trillion now?
Yep.
Oh, my God,
so,
that's hilarious.
At least when I looked today. So when I looked today, Microsoft today surpassed $3 trillion in market capitalization for the first time. Second company to do so, right after Apple. Microsoft was also second to $2 trillion after Apple a couple of years ago, but whatever. So obviously the next thing you look at is, well, where's Apple today? Because I know they were kind of neck and neck there for a week or two. Actually, Microsoft's market cap, when I looked at 130 or so, or 1230, whatever time it was 3.01 trillion.
Wow.
And Apple's was 3.03 trillion.
So they're crazy numbers. These are ridiculous numbers.
It's right now, because it goes up and down, 2.999 trillion.
Okay, so
for MSFT.
So I don't remember the exact time frame for this, but between the day that Apple hit 3 trillion for the first time and the day that they closed a day at 3 trillion was something like 6 months. It was a long time. Wow. So it's one thing to hit it, you know, because, you know,
you go up and down. Apple's at 3.01.
It's like my heart rate in Mexico City. It's all over the map.
well, once you get to those high altitudes, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
High altitudes.
The heady, thin air.
Microsoft, though, is up almost $5 today. I mean, they're doing well. What happened? Was there news?
No. It must be that security thing.
That's
Microsoft.
It.
A lot of confidence there. They got on top of that really quick.
the Dow is going crazy because of Netflix earnings, and maybe Microsoft's getting a little of that on it.
The market's been going crazy for months, actually. It's been good.
I know.
You know, thank God for Joe Biden.
Look at that.
Right?
Anybody? Thank God for Joe Biden.
So, as far as Microsoft goes, look, they made the big bet on cloud computing, and that paid off big time, and big time over a long time. Right. And that was starting to wane. I mean, remember, every quarter for a long time, the growth rate of revenue in Azure, which was pegged at 70% for a couple of years, started going down 65, 60, right? Got down into the 30s. And actually, if you look at that little chart you had up earlier, I bet that the biggest dip there, if you can contract it a little bit, you'll see like more of a dip.
Yeah, this is 1 year. So let me go to 3 months. Well, 3 months shows
probably
you a dip.
Right before
right here.
That was probably the dip that was like, we got AI. We did it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not.
It's gone up a lot since January 5th. The month of January has been very good for Microsoft.
Yes, this has been a good month.
Its biggest low was back here in October. And that's probably
semi-related to this, I had two pieces of physical mail today, both of which are related to Apple litigation. One was a check for the processor slowdown thing.
Yeah,
that they did,
how much?
For the battery.
$92. You get $100.
Wow. And then the other one, which I assumed at first was just related, is not. It's due to family sharing. So Apple is honestly paying me better dividends than the stock market. So that's working out great.
So you were smart. You got in on that class action on the battery.
Of course I did.
Thing.
Why wouldn't anyone who owns an Apple product should be getting
this
check?
I didn't, and I wish I had. Yeah.
Why not? It's free money. I mean, I didn't notice a thing, by the way. Couldn't have cared less, but of course, that was it was an onerous problem.
Oh, my God. Apple deserves pay hundreds of millions to you alone for that.
Thank you.
Yes.
I couldn't agree more.
Yes. They've got a trillion, trillion. They can give you a trillion.
I think Microsoft's latest gain is related to the AI stuff. And honestly, what has happened in the past couple of weeks, the thing we just beat to death last week, these guys talked about AI all year, and then suddenly on, the 15th or whatever, we're like, yeah, here it is. It just did it all. Yeah. I mean, it's rather incredible. And so I think, honestly, Microsoft could have run into some problems if they had released this on their normal schedule, or God forbid the Windows schedule, it was like all over the place. But they just like, yeah, here you go. Like this still blows me away. So that's great.
It's awesome.
Enjoy your $92.17, my friend.
As my wife said, you're paying for dinner tonight, buddy. I said, no, Apple's paying for dinner tonight.
Yeah, baby. So, it's on Tim Cook today.
I'm going to take pictures of my food with an Android phone. Screw you.
Just think, if you'd only bought 350 more iPhones, you could have enough money for a Vision Pro.
Now, that's always the question. How do you get it per device? Because I think Leo would have cleaned up.
Yeah, right. I would have. I probably, because it was a number of models. I think I owned all the models in that.
I was going to say, I absolutely owned all the models. And I probably bought my kids at least one of the models.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Started with the six? I can't remember.
Is that far back? Yeah, I should have gotten about $9,200 then, because I've owned at least almost every generation since then. But anyhow. Yes. So when was it? Monday, Tuesday, whenever it was. Microsoft announced and released Copilot Pro, right, which is the Microsoft 365 Copilot for consumers. And then they expanded the availability of the Microsoft 365 Copilot to basically all the business customers, right? So big, explosive, unexpected event. I spent much of that day trying to sign up for this service, and I have some humorous screenshots of that failing spectacularly. And so eventually I gave up, and the next morning I woke up and I opened my laptop and I typed in my thing, and it went fine. So I went into this. I'm curious. I know, Richard, you subscribe to what, OpenAI Pro or Plus or whatever it's called?
I'm using the API for Home Assistant, just to give it better voice assistance.
I've also got
GitHub Copilot.
Pay the $20 a month to OpenAI.
Yeah, I would like to. Okay, so I.
You want to do it head to head?
No, well, actually, someday I think I do. Yeah,
I mean, isn't this the same? It's GPT-4, right? I mean,
So here's Microsoft does have some advantages, and they're not being related. So, yes, in a kind of pure, I'm chatting to the bot, and I want to generate text or images. Right, you can use GPT-4 Turbo, whatever it's called. You get priority access. You get extra boosts, which is a stupid term, it just means faster image creation if you're using that product. And of course, we talked about someday soon we're going to have something called GPT Builder, which looks to me like a web app that will probably be up on copilot.microsoft.com, where you can build your own GPTs, whatever the heck that means, but we'll get to that. I think the big advantage that Microsoft has is that it's currently and probably forever dominant in the kind of office productivity space, right? Microsoft 365 /Office. And they are integrating features into those apps, right? The core apps like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, Outlook, and I might be missing one, but those at least. And I had made the argument probably a week ago, but I've grown so much since then, that, when you think about this as a consumer, you're like, $20 a month is really expensive compared to the $8 a month I would spend for Microsoft 365 as an individual. And I only use Word and Outlook maybe, or I only use Excel or whatever it is. You kind of run down the list and you're like, I have a hard time justifying this cost. But I'm like, look, I got a Microsoft guy. I got to test this, right?
Well.
And I have to say, I am I'm surprised by how good this is.
It's good for like your, it's actually, no, it, your it's, thumbnail it's images. Very, look at this. This Halo image is incredible.
Yeah. I created, so that, by the way, that image, which is spectacular.
Yeah.
The prompt for that did not say anything like be as provocative as possible and please offend Americans and religious people. And like, no, I mean, it popped that out on its own. I didn't ask for that.
What your prompt
I asked
was,
for an image.
What?
Yeah, I wrote it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Halo Infinite.
It was an image of Halo Infinite in a painting, yeah, an oil painting probably, in the style of a Flemish master.
Yeah, so they made Last Supper, which is in a Flemish.
It's the Last Supper.
Yeah.
It looks like there were guys from the Civil War behind them. This is crazy. There's an American-ish flag as a table linen.
Well, it's got the wrong. Like Leonardo da Vinci is not Flemish.
He's not Flemish. And it's got the flag has the fleur-de-lis instead of stars. It's a dystopian future. Yeah.
It's got the Halo things in the background, including the ships and the Master Chief, which is not sort of Master Chief.
It
literally
is
Master Chief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, that's right. They're the same company, so I'm hoping I'm identified there. But I thought that was, look, I would have taken a sort of Master Chief. I wasn't expecting anything that provocative. But
that's extraordinary, truly.
Yeah, so early on, I realized that just for generating images for the website, this is worth $20 a month. Just for that.
No,
that
it really is. Sure alone.
It's spectacular. But then I looked at Word. I've not looked at Outlook or any of the other apps. I will. But I looked at Word and, you know, I don't actually use Word for writing anymore, but I'm very familiar with it, obviously. And again, cynically on the outside, without actually using AI for writing, you would think, look, I'm a good writer. I'm a professional writer. I don't need this. But you know what? I actually think this will benefit writers of all stripes, whether you're professional or not, or a good writer, or a bad writer, or whatever it might be. Even prolific writers like myself, I run into blocks. I sometimes sit back and think, I can't connect this. It's not happening. And this product is fantastic. And so this is a really good example of where I looked logically at the list and said, what is this? There's like four or five maybe features for Word. I would only use one or two of these ever. This doesn't make any sense. And then I actually looked at what it did and I was like, actually, I completely get this. It's really, it's more
look at the
impressive
one
than I would have thought.
This is the one ChatGPT-4 did, which I will send
it's like
to you.
Master Chief as Colossus.
Yeah. And he's in the Middle East, clearly.
Oh, geez. Okay, great.
So
I have brought down the 20 commandments.
And these guys look like stormtroopers here.
Yep.
Wow, this is just a wild.
So it's bizarre to me that also has curious religious connotations to it, yeah, just like the one I created.
Well, you know what happens when humans become mentally ill? They often have religious fantasies and delusions.
Of course, I see the light.
Maybe this is the sign that the AI
it's saying, just in case, if there is an afterlife, I think I'm going to pledge allegiance here.
Oh, my goodness. I will post
this. You know, hedge your bets.
Yeah.
I might be because you said Flemish master, so you're always going to get a religious context from a Flemish master.
Yeah.
What? Are you? Are you?
Well, that's his point.
The Night Watch?
Then he followed up with, say, try Picasso. And that sounds hilarious. Cubist version of that.
Yeah, it's just like a green blob with a yellow
right,
small
I will
blob.
Do that next. That'll be my next thing.
an elongated, wild, naked woman that looks like a something you'd sit on in a weird movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Anyway, I went into this as cynically as I could have. I love the guys on the horse. The Crusaders on the left are amazing.
I thought it was in charge of the Light Brigade, right? For sure.
It's crazy. But these pictures are great. This is the quality of a painting you would have seen on like a Tolkien book in the 80s. You know what I mean? Like a Michael Whalen painting or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're really nice.
And generated in a moment.
Oh my God. Yes. It's astonishing. So I came away from this really impressed. And I there are people, you read my site, who are, I'm going to call them AI deniers now. who just don't see it. And there's also people are very upset about this notion that anyone would allow like a copilot or any AI to read their email so that it could create summaries. where I'm thinking, I think like 99% of people would like summaries and would not like to see the real thing. Can you just tell me what's going on so I don't have to read it? You know, I think that's a honestly a fairly spectacular use of AI. So
copyright is saying that I can't actually use Picasso because his images were created after 1912. So who should I say? Okay. Rembrandt?
Yeah, Rembrandt's a good one.
Yeah, Rembrandt's good.
Really? Yeah. Rembrandt? All right.
Sure.
I mean, isn't he kind of a Flemish? He's a sort of a Flemish master.
Yeah. Dutch, but sure.
Dutch, yeah. All right. Well, can we get the Night Watch with the Master Chief as the...
Yes, there you go. Holding the lantern. Yes.
That would be awesome.
Exactly.
That actually would be fantastic.
I am bringing the light of Xbox to the world. The light should be green. Actually, then it just becomes Green Lantern and you have a whole nother IP issue.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you, there's a...
That looks like the cover art for Halo Reach, frankly.
Probably, you know, this is the thing, and this is why
it really does.
It is worth $20 to you, Paul.
For me, yeah, it really is.
You could use again.
I expected I'd use this for 1 month and be like, maybe I'll come back in a few. No, this is actually pretty good.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
I have the same reaction for my $20 for OpenAI. I mean, I really get the value.
I still may do the GitHub thing. I don't spend
GitHub
enough
thing
time.
I use almost every day.
Copilot.
Yeah, I don't do it enough.
Oh, it does look like the Halo. It looks exactly like the Halo Reach album cover. Holy cow!
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, we're gonna put them side by side in the Discord.
And the home assistant one was the one that surprised me.
What's that?
The home assistant thing surprised me. Is it this little bit of open source software that basically takes the description of my home assistant instance, writes it into a prompt with my request. So it's like, you know, in a very non-deterministic way, it's like, given the state of the house is this, follow this command, right? Okay. And off it goes.
Yeah. You're going to run into a 2001 Space Odyssey situation where it's going to say, I'm sorry, Richard, I can't do that. I just want you to turn on the bathroom lights.
Yeah.
Seriously. just do it.
You know, you ask the boss about turning off the lights in the living room because it has its moments.
We all have a light story. I can assure you.
Have you talked about this, Richard? I want to hear more about this. So you tied ChatGPT into your home automation.
That's right.
So that you could talk to it and it would do stuff.
So that its language model was wildly better. There's always been a voice system in AHA. It's just not that good. And you could also work through the Amazon and Google products if you wanted. But, you know, we're trying to get it
you
all.
You must have like local. A selection of like free LLMs or open source LLMs that you could use. Yeah. But use the real thing. I know, for lack of a better term.
Because it's quick, and costs pennies. Because right now I'm running it on Odroid hardware, which is pretty limited. So, I mean, I have a bunch of NUCs floating around. If I could take the time to wipe and reconfigure one of those NUCs to run
Locally, it'd be fine. You're not traveling, so that should be fine.
Great. Yeah, excellent. Anyway, it's the head hardware that's the problem right now. So it's not, once you get the command into the machine, it does a pretty good job, but the wake words are problematic. And that's because the cheap front-end hardware is not that good. They spent money. Those little Google Pucks and the Amazon gear, they're actually quality gear.
What do you use for that part of it? Like, what's the microphone?
It's a little ESP32 with a tiny little mic and so forth, and it's like a $40 little gizmo.
Yeah.
But come to appreciate that the wake word actually has to live on the device.
Yep.
It takes two. And so you need a little more horsepower up front. So believe it or not, this open source community being as insane as it is, there's a guy who made a replacement controller board for the little Google Puck. So you get to use the Google Puck shape.
You
take the thing apart. Right. And that's you swap out this board, and now you have total control over it, but it still looks like a Google.
You give Google a lobotomy, and then you...
Well, they gave those things away. I must have a dozen of them, right? Like you got them with everything.
Oh, my God. It was like a cereal promotion. Yeah. You'd get it in the box.
So I had to... The services that do this, and of course, they're out of Shenzhen. The minimum order was 5, and they were like $35 each. So I've ordered a pack of 5 with the electronics already on them. Like, they're all good to go.
I love it. That's amazing.
Why do I feel like this is really just intended for like a nanny cam. Like you want to put this in your Google Puck, yeah. And no one will.
Oh yeah,
know
you're supposed to stick it in a teddy bear or something.
Well, or yeah. Even just in the Puck, and everybody goes, "Oh yeah, it's Google. It's okay." I see. Right. But instead, right. It's recording every word you say or something.
Well, it always was. It's just it was being sent to Google versus being sent to you.
And now it's being sent to Shenzhen yeah. And to you.
And to that's you. It. Now I have control over that. But I mean, I'm searching yeah. Around for
this is how
the
China
solution.
Is training their AI, Richard. You've yeah.
Those little yeah. Minis are amazing little devices. They're everywhere and they're kind of junk. I mean, Google's yep. Largely abandoned them.
Why are you saving them? Is there something that you're using, like the microphone, that makes it worth it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a higher yeah. Quality.
It's the microphone, the speaker, the casement. Like there's, mm-hmm. There are fittings for that that'll put them into a yep. Wall or
plus
a ceiling.
It, you know, they come in colors that look nice in your home. They match the decor yeah. Or whatever. And, you know.
Well, you know what doesn't last long on sitting anywhere in my house that's visible to she who must be obeyed? Anything 3D printed.
Right.
Like, no, she's not right. Going to make right. It.
It looks yeah. Junky. Right. So looks like I junk. Wonder, put the link in the Discord, Richard, for that. Company so that we can put, because I know people are listening would want to do that, and I'm wondering yeah. If I could do that maybe to my Home Max, which is a nice speaker, but Google has
oh you actually
it.
Have the big one still
it's a, yeah
oh.
It's a, doesn't make it
yeah anymore. That if was I actually a good new, speaker at the
it was
time
a great, it's a great yeah. Speaker and it still works yeah. With Google
yeah
but maybe if I could put sure. New brains in it could be even better
oh yeah, I bet you could do that I bet you could
yeah I'll
yeah.
It's a good. It's an odd thing, and I haven't gotten it yet. So we'll see what happens. All it's right. Not a trivial refit to do it, but yeah, I will. Yeah. I'll throw the link in for those who want.
I bet you there are people who want to just play with it, and of course, it's just for the Google Mini. It's not for anything else.
Yes,
yeah. Is it round? And it must be round.
No, it, well, it is the Google Mini.
It's the Google Mini. You actually get a Google Mini. But
you're just changing the controller
circuit board. Must be round to fit in.
Yes, yes, you're right. The circuit board is round. Yeah.
How interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going to take a break, right? Am I right? Do we have the orange break?
Well, I have a couple more in the AI section.
Oh, please do. No. Go right ahead.
I can just go through this quick. So BET is this week in the UK. This is the annual education show. So everybody is there talking about educational stuff. The big news from Microsoft, because everyone's doing it, you know, the AI stuff. They have a reading
you need it, whatever called, it is you need it Paul I think we
yep called reading it, coach right
yes
I don't know don't make me say it again it's been available in the Microsoft education space for a little while, but now they are making it available for free to everybody and are adding generative AI to it so that it can do such things as create stories for children so that they can learn to read using these generated stories. Now that should throw up some red flags. Right. Obviously, there are safeguards in place to, you know, for safety, quality, age appropriateness, et cetera, but, you know, you can expect hilarity there. But I think the neat thing is just that they are just making it available to everybody. And so it's coming out late January. And for people in the education space, there are going to be further enhancements coming in the spring. And Google and Microsoft each are both adding an AI learning path on their respective education services, right? So Microsoft Microsoft Education, I guess, and Google Education, I think are the two. Just coincidentally or not, both just added AI for educator paths. The idea being these are the people that need to know this the most, because how and where can we integrate AI into learning plans and so forth? Obviously, it's scary and new and different. And
we're not talking about teaching people about AI so much as using AI to teach people, right?
Let me think about that. Using AI. Yes,
right. It's kind of
using AI as a co-pilot, like a co-pilot for a teacher, right? You get yes. That's one way to look at it.
But I think there's at the same time is also this.
Go ahead.
I think you've also got this whole angle of the Western teaching system where you put 30 kids of the same age in a classroom in front of one person, you know, basically based on the British system for teaching factory workers and they write down to the alarms for changing the shift and so forth. And trying to teach a single subject to the same all these people the same way. It's like so disconnected from reality. It's insane.
Yeah.
And now we have software that's very capable of watching your ability to answer these questions and tune the material to that person and have a really good measure of competence at the end of it to say, okay, you understand this material now.
My daughter's college roommate, graduated in December and has a job teaching, right? She's a teacher now. And my daughter will graduate, hopefully, probably in May, right? So they're just shifted off a little bit. They were up here for the weekend. Kelly, my daughter, actually had come up here to interview at a school, right? Because she's going to continue in school because I have infinite money, and that's fine. Yeah. So anyway, it was good to see them. But it was interesting talking to her roommate because she was saying that they have these classrooms that have kind of curved half tables with screens. And they this allows them to do basically what you're saying, which is you tailor the lessons. And it's sort of what Google and Microsoft are both saying with education in the education market to the individual needs of each student, which is not what was met by that school system that I went to, which is exactly what you described.
Yeah.
And I am qualified now to work in a mine or a factory and not for much else. So, yeah, I thought even in the short amount of time that, you know, kind of this whole revolution has been occurring, this stuff is already kind of occurring in education. And she's it's not like she works at a rich private school. This is public education too. So,
yeah. Well, and the system needs to adapt because we can't pay teachers enough and we should be paying them more, which means we're going to be fewer of them.
Yes.
So the more, and
the quality goes
so
down.
So much of this rote learning, right? Like even education and technology has bifurcated into you do your video training, right? Your Pluralsights and such of the world. And then you maybe go to a conference for more specialty stuff. Like it sort of speaks to, as we have a larger and larger repertoire of things that kids need to know to be functional humans in this complicated society, a bunch of it is rote training and the software will do a fine job of that. And some of it needs a personal interaction that has a deeper understanding of you and your capabilities.
When you were in school, did you ever do, we called this a language lab, and it was a room you went into where you'd put on a headset with a little microphone and it was all mechanical, right? But it was like Raytheon Corporation presents and they would do these things, but the teacher could listen in on individual students to see how they were doing and then provide feedback that way. But it was very manual, and you know, it wasn't like a, you know, an AI based feedback system could provide instantaneous feedback to people as they did things to everybody all at once, right?
And I think that's the point, right? It's like, this is personal to me, not so much as I have little kids, I don't any more than you do, but I have a few friends who in their 50s have chosen to marry younger women.
Right.
And now have babies.
I know. I can't stand people my age going through what I went through 20 years ago. They're the worst.
Well, and they
is that what you're talking about? First,
well, plus they're keen to do the second go. You know, they have some more means.
Oh, I see.
They have 20 somethings as well. It's like, now that I'm doing this again.
No, I'm talking about people who were never going to have kids.
Yeah.
Got remarried to someone who has kids. And now suddenly they're like, oh my God, you can't believe this. They have friends all around the neighborhood. And it's like, dude, 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, stop. Like,
this is married a younger woman. She
second
really time, wanted
second,
a child.
Second go around.
Second go around. And so they're freaking out about the education part. Like, that's a long conversation we're having.
Yeah, I could see that.
And just like, what's
sounds
the
so
system
dystopian
I want
to
plug into?
To me, it sounds like Brave New World, the robots raising our children.
You know what, though? It looked cool in Battlestar Galactica, and I don't see any reason why.
Oh,
you know,
my God. I mean, but,
you know, the public system's got
serious
problems.
What was that kid's name? Boxy
right?
or whatever. I don't know. Anyway.
You're right. We've screwed up education. So let's really screw
education
it up.
Has so little money.
Yeah.
Right.
The reality is the most engaged parents left the system. They went private. They went home. They did something. And so the system has only gotten worse. And in one hand, you're looking at the community greater good and saying, how do we make the system better? And the other hand, it's like, I have a window.
Well,
12 years for this child to get an education, and I'm going to make sure they get the best education they can.
You know, someone will say, well, just pay teachers more. It's like, no, we're not going to do that. I mean, how else can we do it? Oh, AI? Let's do that. Let's do that. Yeah, we'll do AI.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Related to this as well.
The last of the AI stories.
Yeah, Amazon has apparently been working. Well, they announced this. So I read this report. I kind of wrote it up and then I went back to see what Amazon actually announced. You know, they do that September event. Yeah. They announced this, actually, as it turns out. They just didn't call it this. So there's the classic version of which we now have, the voice assistant. And there's going to be, well, they're working on a paid version. We'll see when it actually comes out. That tentatively is called Alexa Plus. But the idea here is that it will be more intelligent. It will be more personalized. It will be quicker, more accurate. It will cost money. That's kind of the big deal. And that's kind of the thing. Because, you know, at Amazon, It's like, you know, we're kind of the Walmart of the online space. I don't know that we're going to get anyone to pay for this. And so there's a debate.
The point of the device was that it was going to make sales for Amazon, and it didn't.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, we should talk to Charlotte Kindle about that someday.
But the timing was so amazing, right? Both Google and Amazon a couple of years ago say, hey, we made these voice products for this other reason. They haven't worked out for us. We're cutting budgets in a big way.
Right.
And then along comes ChatGPT and it's like, you know what? Voice doesn't have to suck.
Yep, exactly.
And it's so, but I think there's a set of owners of Alexa today. And I'm sorry, I said that word out loud. I try to avoid saying it.
Yeah.
That would pay $5 a month or $10 a month or whatever it is, because they've already created the space and they want the product to be better.
Yeah, right. Well, we're going to find out, I guess. They're apparently, this is all internal, so we don't really know the details. It's not like they've announced the timing or anything, but supposedly there's a milestone coming up where if they don't pass it, they're not going to be able to get this thing out into the world, and it's not as good as they want it to be, et cetera. So it'll probably be sometime. But at the same time,
you've got this question of how much longer, every single time you speak to that device, it costs Amazon money.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, they're going to start cutting that service back. You know, if you spend any time in the home, if you spend time, you know, talk to Insteon folks, right? Like in that, I'm smart homing here, but if you committed to Insteon light switches a couple of years ago, Insteon said, sorry, we're out of money, buy that cloud dependency that we couldn't get our product off of. Well, it still exists and we're not running it anymore. Your switches are broken.
Right. Well, Google just killed, what, 27 assistant features, I think, something like
and
that.
And exactly this. And you know what? You're looking at the costs. And so I think Amazon's positioning here is, hey, there's going to be an X amount per month, or your product's about to get a whole lot more crippled.
This is what I want to know, though, because obviously there has to be a value proposition here, right? So they're going to have some kind of a bulleted list. These are the top 5, 10, whatever benefits of this thing that you are going to pay for. I can't wait to see this list, because I'm really curious.
With the better chat model, right? The language model. I mean, not that the old one wasn't good, but it could be dramatically better.
It's like the free one is like the one with the Boston accent, and then the paid one is, you know, you can actually understand.
Yeah.
And it's weird. That's a strange model.
But clearly the pressure is on that team to stand on their own financial feet, that they're not being able to sell enough Prime or enough anything else to justify their existence. And so the alternative is they kill the product. Right.
I see. I like Google. I think this is too central to their whole consumer AI kind of thing. I don't see how they could possibly do that. But cutting back. I mean,
of course. No, they'll cripple the snot out of it. And again, you know, and Moore's law will work in their favor. It'll cost them less and less to provide you with less, fewer and fewer features.
Too. Right. It's a virtuous cycle. We call that in the industry.
It'll be interesting. I fear it'll just be chatty, and that's really in the way that AI is chatty.
I would pay money for. I do this on my smart screen. I'll say, "Hey, I don't want to see this photo anymore." And then there's a pause, and it says, "Okay, you want us to not show you this picture anymore? Is that right?" Yes. Okay. We will not show. It's like, would you just do
just
it?
Do it.
Like, just do it. Like it's
Echo. God, you have worse, because you'll do it, really? And then Echo will go on and on and on about all the other things it can do.
Yeah,
and Lisa just swears at it. I mean, it's really
it makes me insane. Yeah.
This is where the insurtification will really happen. Hey, now that you refuse to pay for this thing, so we're just going to make it say ads all the time.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. The middle. We're asleep, and you can hear it from the kitchen. But the cats are apparently buying something on Amazon right now. They understand squawking all of a sudden. The cats need more food.
Honestly, that's a good model. That's where I buy all my Instagram stuff between 3 and 4 a.m.
Exactly. I'm going, bleary-eyed, half-drunk.
I'll buy that.
Oh, my God, I need another phone case. I don't even have this phone.
That looks really good.
Yeah, it's a beautiful case. I wish I had the phone.
I'll buy the phone later.
I'll buy the phone.
I bought an electric screwdriver in the middle of the night. And Lisa says, we already have two. I said, yeah, but this one.
This was bad.
I think I told the story where I was looking at my phone. I went, oh, and Steph was like, what's wrong? And I'm like, they don't have the case and the color I want. She's like, are you serious? And I was looking at an ad on like Instagram, you know, like I thought someone died.
Last night, I bought a meat thermometer in the middle of the night.
What?
I do like a good meat thermometer.
Yeah, it's on the sold okay. under the Alien Probe brand.
So it's
brand.
Hugely expensive. It's ridiculously expensive. But Kenji Alt Lopez says, oh, no, this is right. the one because, and I don't know how this would work.
I love it. Normally, you point it at the meat and it tells you?
Sort of. Normally, meat thermometer, yeah. you put it in and you try to get it in the right spot, but it's only telling you right. the temperature there. And you want right. to know, well, is it the same all over? What are the... This mm-hmm. meat thermometer, somehow, you stick it in and it knows all of the temperatures in the whole meat. And yeah. so it can
it's
say...
It's introducing microplastics into the meat.
Yeah, I don't
and then
know
they're
what
reporting
it,
back
shooting out
before
filaments?
They their half-life expires.
I don't know what it's doing.
That's crazy.
But oh it was gosh, 2 a.m. or actually, it's more like 3 a.m.
We live in Shangri-La. Let's just admit it. This is we're living in a Neal Stephenson book, and we just don't even know.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, do you ever like trip and like briefly see outside of the matrix, and you're like, wait a minute,
there's a glitch.
Like that.
I saw it.
Like yeah, I feel like we're literally in a program, and it was written in BASIC with line numbers, and it's really buggy. And I
Jesus, that thermometer is $200, Leo. What are you doing?
Exactly.
How could you not buy a Vision Pro? What's wrong with you? Vision Pro, you could probably stick that in the meat and find out how hot it is.
I have several other meat thermometers.
Yeah. Sure, who doesn't?
I have the meter, the Bluetooth meter. I have an InstaRead. I have one that you jam it in. But I thought, but if this really can tell me with the dark meat and the light meter cooked, that's worth $200.
I just don't believe
it. I think
you
could get like a 3D printed thing where you pass the meat through it and it scans it like it's an X-ray or something.
I'm looking forward to the report on it.
There I'll let you know.
Sure, it's great. Yeah.
Having
is it AI? Is it AI powered though, Leo? Is there AI?
Oh, sure it is. How else would it know what the rest of the meat is?
I would point out my meter thermometer is integrated in my Home Assistant, so my Google devices all say when it's time to go get.
I love
you. Definitely
meter.
Don't want an AI meat thermometer.
The
it's like based
great.
On a knowledge of meat and temperatures. We believe that the temperature might be, you know, like no.
I'll give my meter to my brother-in-law who built a barrel smoker. You know, traditional yeah, nice. That you put wood in and everything. It has a thermometer on the outside, but he doesn't know what the meat temperature is on the inside because it doesn't have any way of doing that. And he says, and I said, well, you could put a thermometer in there.
Can this thing survive 700 degrees? Is that a thing?
I don't know. We'll find out because it gets hot
in
there.
That's what I was going to say. What's that melted blood?
But he won't open it because he says, if you're looking, you ain't cooking. And so he doesn't know. So he
if you're looking, you ain't cooking.
Yeah.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. He says, I want to do it the real way. The real way is what? That you just guess? I don't know.
No, the real, you get those gloves. You can go in there.
Yeah, you put a thermometer in it.
Touch it, you know, without changing the temperature.
Or a probe or something. But he did, you know, it's made out of a barrel, so he doesn't have a probe. So, of course, the first time he cooked a turkey and it was so bad, it was like dried out, desiccated.
And that's better than the reverse.
He made turkey.
Which is
jerky.
A quick visit to the hospital in salmonella or whatever you get.
Well, but we didn't have turkey for Thanksgiving. We were eating at his house and his wife said,
you don't experiment on Thanksgiving. What
no,
are you
he
talking
didn't.
About?
He did it. No, to his credit, he did a few days before. But then that was it. They weren't going to make a turkey because they didn't know how to do it. And I said, what kind of freaking thermometer? So I'm going to give him my meter. Once I get this brand new.
I just use your oven for the day and then we can move on.
Yeah.
You know, it's Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Thanksgiving is not when you experiment with
your
food.
No, it's not.
Tri-tip.
You don't do that.
He knows how to do tri-tip.
I thought we just do chicken. How does that? No. I have chicken every Thursday. Let's, you know.
Oh.
Boy,
all right, let me take a little break to remind people that this fabulous conversation you're hearing right now
just doesn't pay for itself.
Doesn't pay for itself, my friends. Somebody's got to pony
should.
Up.
It should.
What it really pays for is, of course, we have ads, and we have a few, but the ad revenue has really tumbled. I'm sure you've noticed that, Richard. Everybody's noticed it across the board. It's a real problem in podcasting. Thank goodness Lisa 2 years ago said, you know, we need a club so that our audience can support us. And now I really feel like this is the way forward for us. We don't know what the new year will hold, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a good year for ad revenue. In fact, it's pretty obviously not. So it's more important than ever that you join the club. If you're hearing this, I know you're not in the club because club members don't hear it. And I'd really like to invite you to. We have 750,000 unique listeners every month. Only right now, 10,630 people in the club. That's like 1.5%. We would love to get to 5%. if we had 5%, we could grow, we could add shows, we could do so much more. If we had 10% of you, 10% of our audience, we wouldn't need advertisers, we'd be hugely successful, we could hire people back, we could grow. The option, though, is up to you, because the opposite direction ain't good. Please, if you're not yet a member, $7 a month, you get ad-free versions of all the shows, you get additional shows like Paul's Hands-On Windows, which is a great show, Hands-On Macintosh with Micah, you get the Untitled Linux show, Scott Wilkinson's Home Theater Geeks, iOS Today, all these shows that are inside the club only. Plus, you get the Twit Plus feed, which is conversations before and after. You get to watch the stream all the time instead of just when we're recording. Lots of benefits. But the real benefit from my point of view and from, I hope, from yours is you're supporting something that's making a difference. You know, this conversation about AI, you're not going to hear that elsewhere. You know, you're going to hear mainstream media and even a lot of tech channels either singing its praises or with YouTube thumbnails. Ah, you won't believe what the AI did to me. We talk intelligently about these topics coming from a deep knowledge base, and I think that that's valuable. If you think so too, twit.tv/clubtwit. And thank you in advance. We really appreciate it. By the way, while you're at the website, do the survey too. We want to get everybody who listens to the show into the survey before it ends at the end of the month. twit.tv/survey24. All right, that's the begging portion, the begging bowl portion of this show. Don't worry, your money... Club members does not go to my $200 meat thermometer.
It literally goes directly into your Instagram fund. I think we should just be honest.
All right, let's be fair. No. I am living at this point off my retirement funds because every penny needs to go into Twit. And that's fine with me. That's kind of what I always planned by now. It really is what's keeping the show afloat. And so we want you to do that. All right, let's talk about browsers. You're not gonna because look, I'm a Firefox guy.
Okay.
And I know you're a brave guy.
I got some Firefox news for you.
Don't try to woo me away.
Oh, I'm never gonna stop doing that, Leo.
If you put an Instagram ad that said Leo Laporte should be using Brave, maybe I would. You might get
watch with that kind. No, it's coincidental to this, and I'm going to talk about this at the back of the book. I've been testing a lot of different web browsers lately, and I've been using Edge again because I have to rewrite that part of the book again, and it's always my special favorite time of year when I have to go back to that steaming pile. Anyway, but because we're on that schedule now with Chrome and Chromium, we're starting to see some browser updates, right? So Google announced Chrome 121. This has three experimental AI features, one of which in particular looks really interesting. There's a tag organizer feature. I'm fascinated. We're still struggling with tabs, but we are. And actually, I'll talk about that more later. There's also an AI-based Chrome customize panel. So if you use Chrome today and you use their stuff, you know that you can... There's a whole little wizard thing now for making that simpler, but now they're going to add AI to that, and you can have different moods and styles and whatever, and that's kind of fun. But AI themes, et cetera, kind of like we see on Pixel, right? And I think maybe on Chromebook too. I think they have maybe, but at least on Pixel.
Cool.
But the best one I think is this Write in Chrome, like a Help Me Write, which will provide a feature that provides writing suggestions in line. Anywhere that you're writing, right? So it could be like you're writing a review, an email, or, you know, filling out a form, whatever it is. Google.
This keeps happening, right? Like everywhere's trying to help me write.
Google has been marketing the Pixel line of phones for years as like the helpful phone, right? And they can list this laundry list of AI-based features, things that will pick up a spam call and try to get the person to respond. And if they don't, they'll just mark it as spam and go on. And, you know, this stuff is all over Pixel. And this feature to me reminds me of that. It's like, what type of thing like that could I use in a browser? And the truth is, all of us, whether you're, again, professional, right, or just normal person, mm-hmm. whatever, could use this, right? This is actually very useful. So I think that's really cool. I wouldn't go... Yeah, Chrome on your computer, but I mean, whatever. It's and this is something we'll probably see everywhere, right? This is the type of AI that's just going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
So I think that's cool.
Bit by bit, and it seems. I mean, eventually, it's annoying. Like, please stop helping me go away. But it's getting me to start question. Like, should I keep paying for Grammarly because they've served me well? Although I've come to
Grammarly, though, Grammarly's gone downhill pretty hard. Yeah, I mean. my wife and I, you know, we're writers, and we both use it. And I've actually started using other tools just to kind of see. I actually pay for something now called Language Tool, which is a, you know, a plugin like Grammarly. I like to have two levels of editing. So I use something in whatever editor I'm using, and then something when I publish to the web. So I get
when you're getting it shaped to go have another set of eyes, effectively another set of digital eyes on it. I like that.
Yeah, that's exactly. Because each catches something the other does not.
Yeah.
You know? But Grammarly's still one of them. But yeah, I've,
it's that weekly email from Grammarly telling me how great I am.
Yes. Well, my wife pays for it. I've never paid for it. We both complain about it. What I don't like is the way they keep pushing Grammarly Premium when you're trying to edit a document. It's like, guys,
get out of my way or I'm out of here. Yeah.
Yep. You know how I feel about
it. I bought it ages ago and it's served me well, but it's definitely getting certified.
Yep.
I feel it.
Yeah. It's better than the Microsoft editor, which is weird because they pulled Microsoft editor out of Word, and that should be the best one. We talked about that, you know, a couple of months ago when I was bitching and moaning about Word. But anyway, so this stuff is going to be all over. And
a new version of Firefox.
I know. Ooh, a new version of Firefox. Yep. Across all the platforms. So on desktop, for you developers in the world, when you type, you get suggestions, right? So it could be suggestions for URLs. It could be Google search result suggestions, et cetera. They're integrating with their own. They have this kind of public open developer documentation. So I call it MDM Web Docs. That's integrated now into that address bar, which is awesome, right? You can also store pass keys on Macs if you have in the iCloud keychain, which people tell me is one of the better implementations of passwords. And they've actually written a separate post about this soon. But if you're a Linux guy, I'll just point out that they now support .deb packages across all the Debian style Linux distributions, like Debian, obviously, but Ubuntu, Linux Mint, et cetera. It's supposed to be a dramatic improvement with regards to reliability, performance, et cetera, et cetera. So look up the Firefox blog and see what they wrote about that if you're using Linux and Firefox, which a lot of Unix users, I think, do use Firefox.
Yeah.
And then the mobile versions, a little less going on there, obviously. But on Android, you can now set Firefox as the default PDF reader. This is kind of I think this is the, you know, what most people would want. I use this browser. I want to use it to read PDFs as well. That's fine. And then on iPhone and iPad, it supports kind of depending on what you're doing, long press for sections on their homepage if you use that. Although that browser supports extensions, so maybe you should use a different homepage. I don't know. I liked, actually, their homepage is pretty good because they do Pocket, and I actually use Pocket, so you can have that kind of Pocket feed. It's not bad.
Yeah, I don't. I usually read my Pocket emails.
I feel bad about Firefox because Brave is so good and Firefox stinks. No, I'm just kidding.
He's doing it. I am a
I'm kidding.
Firefox
I did that
user,
for I,
and now I'm like thinking I should download Brave. I should try it again.
Yeah, you should. It's every warm time, and comfortable and cozy.
It is Chrome, right? So it's Chromium.
It's Chromium.
So
yeah. So it'll just work.
Secure and private by default. Minimal UI.
Do you use their
UI.
Search engine instead of?
No, I don't like their search engine. I use DuckDuckGo.
I use Kagi. I pay money for my search engine, and I like it.
You are from a different planet. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't want
about.
To support Google. First of all, Google search sucks. Let's admit that.
It's hasn't getting it? Worse.
Well, it's gotten worse and worse and worse.
Okay.
Kagi's good.
It has gotten worse. Although, you know, it's still... I rate things based on how many times it forces me to go to Google to get the right answer or whatever.
Yeah, well,
and DuckDuckGo has done a good job in that regard. Brave Search to date is not, and that's why I don't use it. I would be happy to use more Brave stuff if they, if just worked properly, I guess. So there is, this is not out now, but Brave announced that they're going to simplify their kind of fingerprinting protections. They have two levels right now. So fingerprinting is this way that trackers get around anti-trackers or tracker blockers, right? They take these little bits of innocuous information and pull it together to develop a fingerprint of you and identify you uniquely without doing it directly, right? Because they're being blocked. I guess the ironic problem is that if you go into strict mode on Brave, you stand out so much that it turns out they can track you more easily. Right. So they're like, you know what?
You're the one person in strict mode.
Yes. Exactly. Right.
So few people use
One guy in the Boston area is using Brave in strict mode. I think it might be the same guy. So that's a problem. So they're going to just get rid of that. And Steve looked at it
yesterday and concluded that this was the right thing to do and that the basic fingerprint prevention was good.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. That's good to hear. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not something I've ever configured. So I use whatever their basic mode is. And it's, you know, you can strict, go, the EFS
like,
has a.
Like everything's strict, broke everything.
Right. So, that's right. Yeah. So, this is the
long,
balance.
As long
this
as you
is,
don't need to surf the web, it's this thing works great. Yeah.
Yes. This is the same issue with security, right? You know, it's like how far do you want to go, right? EFF has a website called Cover Your Tracks. You can just Google that or whatever you're using. And, check your browser and see how well protected you are against tracking, including fingerprinting. They also have an excellent description of what fingerprinting is on that site. So it's worth checking out. And if you are, if your browser is not doing a good job, which Chrome and Edge and whatever else isn't by default, obviously install the correct anti-trackers in extension form that will solve the problem.
And Firefox also has anti-fingerprinting measures in it. Yep. I like Firefox because unlike everything else, there's no commercial. Well, that's not true, is it? Because most of the
they are selling services. You know, they have a VPN and whatever.
Yeah, that's fine. Actually,
I gotta stay alive.
Yeah, I want them.
Not begrudge these companies that stuff. I wouldn't. Firefox is inoffensive in that way for sure. Opera, Brave, actually, and all these they're all pushing something. They're trying to make money in this world.
They're trying to stay alive without selling you as the product.
Yeah.
Which is one way to stay alive is just make you the product.
Yes. Opera,
this is such a hilarious story.
I just think this is really funny. So I don't even know if this is true. So they're having a promotion. That's true. And whoever wins gets to go, supposedly will spend a week on a desolate island off of Iceland and become their tabfulness guru. Tabfulness being inspiration for their Tab Islands feature. It's just a tab grouping feature. I know. But so supposedly there's a guy, this is what they say. This is just fantastic. There's no way this is true, but supposedly they have a guy who's been living on this island off of Iceland for 7 years. And he is the inspiration for their Tab Islands feature. And he needs a vacation. So obviously he's going to another desolate island to get away from it all. And you can, I know, it's so stupid.
This is
and you
hysterical.
Can fly out there. It's unbelievable.
It's just promotion, and, right?
Yeah.
You
no,
think
it's
this
just,
is legit? Like there really
I,
no, is
I absolutely
guy?
Don't think this. No, I think you will. If you win, you will. I do think you will get $10,000.
Yeah.
I have to assume this is some more
do
of a glamping
to live
type
there?
Experience. I don't know. That seems like yes. I mean, like, yeah, it's like one of those movies where you win an inheritance, but you have to spend the night in the house or something.
Yeah, this is like, a month. It is internet. Like, obviously, they have bandwidth somehow.
It's so funny.
It's just hilarious.
It's crazy. I love this guy. He's perfect, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of based on the notion of like this kind of Nordic notion of coziness when it's cold and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. And serene, you know. It's funny. I think it's funny. So good for them. That's cool.
The island of Bjarnary.
I know, which I'm pretty sure. Isn't that that singer that screeches?
Yeah, Bjarnary.
I think that's the same person, right?
Yeah. I'd screech if I had to live on that island for any length of time.
I know.
That was just an ad. You know, it's obviously just an ad, right? But it's cute.
Yes.
It's cute.
It's fun. I think it's fun.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
We have two Xbox stories, and they're literal Xbox stories, I guess, not like just gaming stories. Microsoft brought back its Developer Direct event the other day. I guess it was last week. And they showed off not too many, honestly, several games that were coming out over the course of the year. The big one being a Indiana Jones title that everyone seems to be curiously excited about. I guess you didn't see the movie. and that's cool. You know, Hellblade, new Hellblade movie, game, sorry, et cetera, et cetera. So I, you know, again, we're just sitting here waiting for Activision Blizzard, and I don't know why they bother doing this, but Avowed is a big RPG coming from Obsidian, but not until the fall, right? But that people are excited about that. I guess there's some interesting stuff here, but I to me, again, like I'm so jaded right now. It's like, I just want Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, you're waiting.
I started playing. I think it's Resident Evil 2. So kind of a remastered version appeared on Xbox Game Pass, et cetera.
Yeah, it was like last week or the week before.
So I streamed it to my Google tablet over, Xbox Cloud Gaming. And honestly, it was, the aiming was a little off, and I'm like, okay, it's cloud gaming, that's why. And then I installed it locally. I actually fired up the Xbox. I played this thing on my Xbox the other day, and it's exactly the same, actually. So it, to me, what it feels like is a PC port to the console. Like, it's very PC-like, the way the menus are and everything. It's not, it's clearly not like a console-native thing. But, it's a legit scary game. It's a little more puzzle solving than I would like, and I don't mean that like I can't solve puzzles. I mean, I don't want to figure out the combination on a lock to get through a door. It's just that type of, it's just stupid. I just want to know what the story is. It's a good story from what I could tell so far.
Show my touch screens, let me shoot stuff, I'm happy.
Yep, it's legit scary. One thing you have to get used to in Resident Evil, because again, as an Xbox guy, it was not a big thing for me for many years, is in my world, in my brain, if you get bit by a zombie, you're dead. And then you turn into a zombie. But in the Resident Evil world, that's not the case. You actually just get injured. So you can get bitten multiple times and recover and heal yourself and do all this stuff. Because the first time I got bit right away, and I'm like, what's going on? And actually, it's just a different take on zombies. I don't know. I'm talking about zombies.
There's more than one kind of zombie. I mean, starting with none of them are real.
Well,
that's first.
Fair enough.
Not a thing.
So last, it might have been Friday night. Because it was like two back. It was like the Microsoft security thing and Halo were both kind of in the news like at the same time. Mm-hmm. And 343 Industries, which is the studio that is responsible for Halo now that Bungie is long gone, and the makers of Halo Infinite, have been releasing seasons, right, as we do now for modern video games. So seasons are kind of a combination of events that take place over some period of time, and then DLC, what I think of as DLC, like downloadable content. So you could have new skins and weapons and maps and whatever else, like depending on the game, right? And as recently as a week ago, I would have held up Halo Infinite as a great example of a Microsoft studio doing something spectacular for gamers, which is providing ongoing value. Mm-hmm. And kind of supporting the whole Game Pass ecosystem, because you kind of subscribe to it. So you don't just get this one drop and we're done, or one drop and here's a season's pass that you pay another $60 for. And then a year later, it's over. It's like this kind of ongoing thing. So the latest couple of Gears of War games were like this. Sea of Thieves is probably the best example, kind of a B-level game that, you know, is just doing great because they keep supporting it with new content. And people love that, you know. And they're not doing that anymore. So,
well, it's always this question game. Of, is it making them money? Like,
that's the thing. So, well, I have a guess, and I think, and to me, it's related to Activision Blizzard, right? So, until Activision Blizzard comes on board, you're trying to provide value. You have some number of games. They have some number of updates. Like Flight Simulator is another great example, right? Flight Sim is actually a blockbuster game. It's doing great, and they have all these world updates they do where you get high level imagery from different areas of the world. Awesome if you're into that stuff.
Yeah.
And but how do you handle a game that underperforms? Like Halo Infinite came out a year late, dropped like a dud, was feature incomplete.
Never got the user several counts it needed.
And it just never, it just never picked up any amount of steam. And it's a game that, like, they really were going for the original trilogy vibe. But if you look up like sales figures, a couple things stand out. Like one, first trilogy up to the apex, Halo 3, which I think actually was the best game. And then it's been downhill ever since. And they don't release sales figures for this game because, you know, it was released in the Game Pass era and it's more about usage and, you know, these kind of soft numbers and so forth. So I think there are a couple things going on here. One, I think Halo Infinite has underperformed and it just doesn't make sense to throw money at this. It's just that the audience just isn't there. They're still going to have updates, you know, smaller updates. And everyone was expecting the season 6 to start this month, and instead they're releasing a really small update. I've forgotten the name of it already, but there are going to be 3 of these smaller updates over the next several months, smaller events, smaller DLCs, and maybe collectively that is what they would have done for season 6, maybe, you know, maybe roughly speaking. But I bet it drops this year. I don't think we're going to be talking about Halo Infinite a year from now, because we're going to be talking about the next Halo game, which they casually announced in this post. Or it was actually a live event, but in this live thing that they did on YouTube where they, you know, right like 2 seconds before the end, they're like, hey, by the way, we're not doing these things. We're not doing these updates anymore. Oh, and we're hiring. Everything's great. And we're working on a new Halo game. And it's like, or new, well, they said new content. Sorry, they didn't say new Halo game, but What else would they do? You know, like, it's that would be like Steam not doing Half-Life. Anyway, I'm sorry. Or Valve, rather. Anyway, terrible things have happened in my life. So I'm thinking Activision Blizzard comes on board. Mm-hmm. A bunch of that stuff goes to Game Pass. We don't have to do this stuff anymore. Not for the games that aren't performing, right?
Yeah.
There's no reason. People will join. There'll be so many people joining just for Activision Blizzard that I think this will be, you know, this is less of a concern. Like the pre-Activision Blizzard Game Pass kind of needed this, not right. just for top tier games. I think we still do that for top tier games, but for second tier games. And now it's like, you know what? We spent a lot of money on this. Let's that's where the investment is now.
Let's go get some value from it.
That's my guess. They did not say that, obviously. Why would they? But that's where I think it's going.
Yeah, I think
so.
I think
we live in interesting times.
Yeah, no, it's going to be some fun. That's for sure.
All right. Let's. We got the back of the book still to go, don't we? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Unless like Rip Van Winkle, I slept through this episode. Well, that would mean this would be a good time to just pause. Have a drink, relax, and enjoy. You're listening to Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. Paul Thurrott kicks off the back of the book with our tip of the week. I say, what's the tip of the week, Paulie?
You're screwed. No. So
it's funny because downloaded and installed Brave. So maybe I am.
Oh, good. No, you're going to be fine. In the wake of last week's Outlook debacle, Consumer Reports teamed up with examine how Facebook tracks their users.
Man.
And yikes. Outlook was the problem. There were over 186,000 companies tracking Facebook users. 186,000. On average, over 7,000 per person. It's nuts. What? It's nuts.
That's crazy.
So, again, it is crazy. But
look at all those lions hunting that one gazelle.
These guys are really good at it, unlike Microsoft. So Microsoft will get there. I don't want anyone to worry about this. It's happening. But for now, if you want to be tracked, you got to go on Facebook. This raises, or whatever, I guess Instagram would work too. I don't know. So the question here is, you know, how can, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but I've been looking into this again. I've been testing NextDNS on my PCs. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. Mm-hmm. I know Richard uses a Pi-hole, which is another popular kind of solution for this. Obviously, if you can put this thing in one place and have it just work for all your machines, that's ideal.
Yeah, NextDNS is a Pi-hole in the sky, essentially.
Right. Know? Yeah. But you can put it on a router, depending on your router, right? Yeah, so you could use it as that if you wanted to. I have it right now. I'm just installing it on individual devices.
It's even more flexible than that. Start creating in your NextDNS profile. Mm-hmm. You can create different profiles. So, for instance, Lisa wants to see all the ads because she sells ads. I don't have it as restrictive on the router, but then I use different. I could show you if I log into my NextDNS.
Okay, yeah, I would like to see this.
It's a really powerful. I love NextDNS. The more I use it.
For me, it's always worked well, but anyone who uses something like this, I think I used the example of the Google discovery feed. You'll run into these issues where, you know, stuff just breaks, right? That's what happens. Yeah. And so the trick is you have to do a little bit of management. Mm-hmm.
I have different profiles, right?
And so how do you do this on the device? You actually just use a code. In other words, you put it into the
client.
You
do. In fact, I'll show you on my iPhone when I open that NextDNS. You can say in the settings that you want to use profile C34964.
Okay.
And then
that just lets through my commenting system because that got blocked by NextDNS, right?
That's the kind of thing you want, that kind of flexibility.
Yeah.
And of course, you could do all this with a Pi-hole. It's running in the cloud. I think they have some nice features. And I'll show you again on the NextDNS website. You have all these tabs in your setting of things you can turn on and off.
Right.
This is much like uBlock Origin, where you can choose which trackers you want to use. You can add block lists. You can say, I want to block all Sonos.
I want to block everything that Windows is doing.
Right.
Which would be such a wonderful.
Right. It has parental controls. You could set recreation times. I feel like this, and it's very inexpensive. I mean, you can use it for free for 300,000 hits.
I was going to say, I think I spend less than $60. It's tiny. It's something really small. I don't remember.
Yeah,
how much does anyone know how much it costs?
I can't. It's cheap. I think it's 99 cents a month, but I don't know. I can look.
Okay. Yeah, it's very inexpensive. Yeah.
Yeah. And it will also log all this, which is nice. So you can see per device what stuff is getting blocked and what devices you're doing.
It's $2 per month. That's right.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And I like this. Yeah, they call it GAFAM, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, and Microsoft.
There it is, yes.
And their dominance in the stuff you're doing. And that's
four or five companies that dominate
an eye-opener where your traffic's going.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all because a DNS server really has so much information about everything you're doing. It's actually an eye-opener.
Right.
I think it really works great, but
you have to, I guess the tip such
all
as
all
it
these
is.
All need carrot feeding.
Yeah, look into this and understand that you're going to do some maintenance. You know, but it's worth it. This isn't like the thing we were talking about where you have to change the password on every single one of your accounts.
No, they make this as easy as possible.
This is actually, it's a little bit of work, but it's, I think the...
Well, the defaults are good, so you could just take it as it is if you didn't want to go through a lot.
But you'll notice, I noticed, like I said, certain things you're like, okay, that's not working properly.
I've always felt like it breaks something. Every configuration
good
you've ever
security
done.
Security always breaks something, right?
Yeah. I asked my wife about this, by the way. I think I said I was going to do this last week. And I said, so, you know, it's not like I monitor her phone. Like, I'm like, have you turned this off? Do you still use this? And she says, no, I still use it. But she says, every once in a while, I can tell something's not working and I just disable it and reload. And then I do my thing and I put it back on.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay, that's cool. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, for some reason, I've been trying to unfreeze my Experian account for the last 2 days. And I don't, there's something that Experian just doesn't like that it's on my browsers or in my DNS or something.
Right.
It's giving me a hard time.
Everyone here is kind of technical and, you know, we do all these things and then we complain. Like the people on my website are like, oh, your thing doesn't work. And I'm like, I don't think it's me. You know, and you can tell, like, no, I haven't done anything. And then they're like, oh, you're right. I installed some insane browser extension. Or I did, you know, like it's always, you know, we forget like the stuff we're doing that, you know, could screw everything up.
Right.
Anyway. This is going to be an ongoing story. I'm talking to a security expert actually about password stuff on Friday. There's going to be a lot more of this stuff. There's just a... We live in a horrible world, and I know I'm not going to solve the problem, but I'm going to try to work around it as much as I can.
Giving us good advice is not going to hurt, right? Like,
I want to make sure it's good advice.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like you're doing the homework for us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Was it Jerry Purnell used to say? You know, I make these most mistakes so you don't have to. My thing is like I make these mistakes because I'm an idiot. But if you can benefit from that anyway, that's same net effect, right? I mean, it's fine.
We'll get there.
Speaking of browsers, and then, did you...
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I did.
Yes.
So I've been using a lot of different browsers. They're all interesting in their own ways, good or bad. But one of the more interesting ones is something called Arc Browser. And I think this speaks to this audience. This is a complicated product. And it's complicated in part because it does a lot. It's a little bit like Notion, right? Notion is the thing we use for the notes. Most people would, if you just looked at it, it's just text. You're like, what's the big deal? But Notion is actually very powerful. There's a lot of hidden features. There's a lot of little icons. And it works differently than like Microsoft apps. So if you want to change something, you have to click the little dots and, you know, turn into. And, you know, it's a whole different world. There's a syntax for writing with slashes that does style and blah, 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 whatever. So I would say that Arc is to browsers what Notion is to like OneNote. You know, it's the same thing, a web browser in this case, but it's very different. There's a sidebar on all the time. The tabs are always vertical. They have these notions of folders and spaces and its favorites as well that are not the favorites you think. There are little UI bits that don't do anything when you mouse over them, so you can't tell what they do. So you have to click and then destroy something and it is a little complex. However, I think for power users and people who are kind of technical and like to be organized and like to do things in a different way, you'll stumble a lot because it is confusing. But it's very interesting. And for people who live in a browser, I mean, this might already be, if not, might evolve into that kind of Uber product because it's kind of like a one-stop dashboard for everything you do on the web. I don't know what else to call it. It's crazy.
Who's got the wait list for this?
Yeah, so this is the problem. So they launched on Mac, I don't know, a year and a half ago. They promised that by the, or whatever that was, last year maybe, they promised that by the winter 2024, they'd have a version for Windows. I signed up for the wait list at the time. I got in December, and you just have to wait, basically, for now. They do have an announcement coming, I think, on the 30th or 31st, that may be related to this. It may be related to AI features that are coming to the browser. It may be related to a Teams version, not Teams, the product from Microsoft, but like a team-based version of Arc Browser, because they do have aspirations to be like a Slack or Notion, in the sense that they see this as a platform that could be extensible and that businesses might pay for. And it's there's a lot of research to do here. You should look up this company, which is called The Browser Company. You know, watch some of their videos, read their documentation. But look at this product. It's not something I could ever, you know, recommend to my brother or my wife or
not for
non-technical
civilians.
Friends. Yeah. But this is, it's fascinating. Here's one for you. If you use Terminal in Windows or Visual Studio Code, you may know that there's something called the Command Palette, which is like Control-Shift-P, and it brings up this kind of Apple Search-looking box in the middle of the product, and you start typing, and then it auto-fills, and you get commands. It does that. So Control-T in this browser has nothing to do with, well, it has something to do with tabs, I'm sorry, but it's kind of this one, it's like a command box, basically. So you can use it to do like autocomplete for web searches, like you would in an address bar, which it doesn't really have. You could use it to find tabs that are open now or were open in the past. If you have favorites or folders or whatever other things you might have, you could use it to find that stuff. So unless you pin things, it actually auto closes tabs like after 24 hours by default.
Wow.
It's inscrutable in some ways. There is, in fact, a settings interface, but there is no UI to find it. It's still in beta, right? It's not there yet. But it's fascinating, and it's not, like I said, for people who watch this show, I think if you can, you can,
and if they could poach the power user, they've got something.
Yes. Two things, just to kind of conclude this, it's Chromium based, right? Which I know some people grow on, whatever. To me, that's an advantage. But the disadvantage to me is that it's not secure and private by default. So you're going to want to install an anti-tracker like uBlock Origin or Privacy Badger, and probably an ad blocker, frankly. And then throw it against that EFF site I was talking about, the Cover Your Tracks. Just make sure you're covered there. But
does it use the Chrome browser extension?
It's Chromium.
Chrome browser extension would work,
yes,
like uBlock Origin.
That's right.
Or Bitwarden or that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Well,
yeah, everything.
I just stopped my Brave download and I've just installed Arc. So.
All right.
I wish you'd
I'm
make
glad
it.
I'm glad I got you in the hook for like 13 seconds. Yeah, but you know, you win some, you lose some. It's okay. And then, just speaking of Notion, real quick, I think it was the day we did Windows Weekly. I didn't look at it until later, but Notion released their calendar, which is based on that Cron acquisition they did. Right now, it only integrates with Google Calendar. I believe you could use it as a standalone calendar as well. I wish it was integrated into Notion, the app. It's a standalone app, and so it's like
sure looks like Trello. Holy man!
Yeah, if you are a heavy Notion user and you use it collaboratively with other people regularly, I mean, Richard and I do the notes together, but we're not interacting all week long, you know, discussing topics and things like. But for people in actual businesses, you know, honestly, this looks really compelling. So it's good to know about. And honestly, if you use Notion, you've heard about it because, my God, do they promote it incessantly now. It looks solid. I mean, it's, you know, I given the Outlook news from last week, I wish they would make a Notion email client. That would be something I would use or be more likely to use than Calendar. But they seem to be heading into that Slack / Google Workspace, you know, kind of territory. Maybe we're going to see a Notion suite someday in the future. Who knows?
It's such a weird pivot.
I know.
Yeah,
they should have just come over to the music service. That would have made more sense. You listen to music when you work, right? I mean, that makes sense.
While you're making notes, let me play you a song.
Yeah,
it only works with Google Calendar, right? Which is kind of a non.
Right now, it's gonna work with everything. This is just the first release is Google Calendar.
I just don't understand why people don't work with CalDAV, and then it would work with everything instead of saying, "Oh, you got to be."
Yeah, I think it's because you can't make money on CalDAV. Yeah, right. I remember when Apple started doing an iCal a million years ago, and you could get like the Red Sox schedule in your calendar. And I was like, this is like an RSS feed for my calendar. I love this. Like, I thought that was the greatest thing in the world.
Right.
And I think that was the last time I used it. Unfortunately, it was a long time ago. It's been a while. Well, you know, the calendar app in Vista that was exactly the same, I probably used it there for 10 seconds too. But CalDev, you don't really hear about that too much anymore.
Yeah, except that it's a standard.
It's a standard.
No, it is. Absolutely, yeah. It should be everywhere. Yeah. It should be,
like mini standard, like web dev too. It's like it's standard.
Well, there's CardDev, CalDev. Yeah. And I think Google supports
it. Different products interpreted it differently.
Well, yeah, right. Maybe that's...
Anytime you have an experience trying to relay information between a Google Mail account and an Outlook Mail account, you get it. And it's literally account by account. Like, Carl's purely Gmail, and there's one account where I can't send him an invite. It just won't arrive in the form. But his other account, nice. No problem at all. And it's literally just the email address. That's the difference.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, tell him to make an alias. Well, that will solve the problem.
Yeah, we just found an account where it worked fine on, and that's the account I put it into.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Solved.
Solved. Well, Richard, I have given you what I believe is at least 40 minutes to get through.
Look at you.
This thing. So it is my apology for last week.
The good news is I have a really great whiskey story, although it was an awesome.
And by the way, this is another great choice whiskey-wise, but we'll get
this particular run as recorded back at Ignite, so months ago, and I've been holding on to it to publish it now. Gil Pekelman is the CEO of a company called Atera out of Israel. And they had for many years been building a really sophisticated product for a deep analysis of the state of workstations and servers inside of networks. And then last year got heavily involved with LLMs to add this sort of this communication interface over top of understanding the machine. And what it turned into was an extraordinary tech support product. So that when a user inside your organization needs to submit a ticket, like they have a problem, want to change a password, whatever that may be, you now have this much better parser of that information up front. And then you can build playbooks for one of the most likely scenarios. So many of the, you really go from a sort of co-pilot to an autopilot mindset where it's like, oh, the tool knows how to solve this and it'll walk the user through it with a voice interaction throughout the whole thing. And that's awesome. But when it can't solve it, it will then also collect analytics related to it. So because it understands the request by the user, it knows what analytics to pull from what devices and sort of puts together a package for your tier two support for your, now your person needs to get involved. And so they're not starting from scratch. They don't have to check with the, have you turn it off and turn it back on again? It's like, okay, we've already done these things. I try it. The software helped them with this. And now here's the data set. Go. And so a much better use of your tech support people to keep people operational and to give a sense of responsiveness that traditional support has a tough time doing. That, you know, a person frustrated at the moment writing that nasty gram email for how do I make this work gets an immediate response from a piece of software that just is not emotionally affected by them at all. And then goes on from there to actually get as many of the simple problems solved and as much data as possible so that when the person needs to get involved, it's efficient.
By the way, autopilot as the next step from co-pilot. Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Good line, huh? Yeah. Yep. I did not think of that. That was Gil. We had a great conversation. And look, tech support folks have been outgunned for a long, long time. And running the same script every day is a path to insanity where you're just so tired of telling them once again how to change their password, right? So the fact that you can get more of that solved with automation and not annoy them that much, it's compelling. I'm very excited to look at the product and to experience its ability to help folks through an awful lot of tasks. And you can build your own. So, you know, as a tech support person, as you're seeing what's my most common ticket that we're still handling by people, to be able to then improve the automation to the point where that ticket is fully automatically served. So that you're only dealing with exception cases, which makes for happier tech support people too. Like you're only working on cool problems then, not the same thing every day.
Very nice.
I like it.
I think we got to go to Bear Country. Or no, wait a minute. That's, well, that was last
that
time.
That was a few weeks ago. Right? That was a couple weeks ago.
I wouldn't mind going back, though, if you want to go.
Are there bears in Japan?
I mean, look, not anymore, no. We're doing country tour, right? Like I did a bunch of Scottish towards the end of the year last year when I got stuck in Balvenie and Glenfiddich.
Oh, yes.
And then we got to give the Americans a break. And I'd gotten a bottle of Elijah Craig over Christmas, which is gone now. And the Bear Face is still upstairs, but it's been doing well in cocktails. Writer's Tears, I didn't buy for that particular case, but I felt like, we've done English, we've done the Scottish and the American and the Irish, and so we should do Irish as well and the Canadian. So it's time for Japan. And I realized I've only ever been to Japan one other time. It was episode 826 when I did sort of the overall discussion of what makes Japanese whiskey distinct. And of course, and then we landed on this really unusual whiskey, the Ohashi, the whiskey sherry cask, which is made with rice. They use the shoju process to make whiskey because Japan now has a standardization for whiskey that's taken years. It really only fully came into effect in 2021, where their whiskey needs to be a spirit that's fermented, distilled, and aged in Japan. It must use grain, but it can be any kind of grain, including rice. We have to use Japanese water, which is an interesting specification. Like, what's the alternative? But okay. And at least 3 years in casks. They also limited the size to 700 liters, which is a pretty big barrel, but not the biggest. You know, that certain classes of large barrel, like certain port barrels and so forth, they get really huge. They couldn't be using. Can't over distill. Can't go above 95%, which is still high. Can't go below 40%. Needs to be bottled in Japan. And those rules mean it's Japanese whiskey, but then they immediately create a category called world whiskey, which allows you to work around that problem. And many of the major distilleries make a world whiskey on top of making Japanese whiskey. I was going to talk about Suntory, which is literally named for its founder, which is Tori Shinjiro, as in so that Tori with two I's, they turned it to Suntory, who is the originator for Yamazaki. Arguably the first whiskey in Japan. And there's always people talk about that. And we talked about this in 826 back that older show where Takashiro Masataka, who had done his training in Scotland, joined with Tori to make the Yamazaki distillery. And after a certain amount, I think it was 10 years, he's like, okay, that's enough for me. I'm going to go do my own. I disagree with you a bunch of stuff. And that became Nikkei, another major Japanese distillery. And by the way, there are many more now. This was in the 30s and through World War II and into the harder times of whiskey. But today, when whiskey is so hip.
This, by the way, is fully described in your episode of your the whiskey creation process, Japanese whiskey creation.
And that was probably episode 826. The most familiar, popular Japanese whiskey or... I feel like this is the one I see the most often.
Suntory is Yamazaki is, right?
Well, and Hibiki especially.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's go.
Hibiki is made by Suntory as well. But, I mean, when you talk, Suntory we know because of Lost in Translation.
Right.
2003.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Suntory time, which, by the way, in the story, what Bob is promoting is Hibiki 17.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That makes sense. I've been meaning to rewatch that movie ever since you mentioned it before, actually.
Such a good movie.
It's a great movie, and a very young Scarlett Johansson and in her underwear for some reason, which I thought served no purpose. Like,
nobody's complaining. What do you mean?
You know, worst things in this world. Interesting that movie came out in 2003, which was the same year that Yamazaki 12 won the gold medal at the International Spirits Challenge. Which was the first time a Japanese whiskey had ever won an international challenge.
The Bill Murray effect.
Something like that, except it literally was the same year. What I find interesting when you really study that particular whiskey was, you know, they laid that up in 1991, like literally in the middle of the Japanese financial crisis.
Wow.
Was when that stuff was going into barrels, that winning whiskey. And it may, you know, it's easy to hate on a company like Suntory. I mean, they're now called Beam Suntory because they bought Jim Beam as well. And they own Ben Nevis. And like they, you know, it's a massive multinational conglomerate with the parent holding company in Osaka. But through those difficult times, like when whiskey didn't sell well in the 80s, they never stopped making single malts. They just didn't make very much of it. So they were funding it on the back of Suntory whiskey. Like the when you talk about what did Suntory originally make, like back in the 30s, they weren't making single malts. That wasn't even a thing, right? We don't get the term single malt as a product until the 1960s. They were making whiskey, Suntory whiskey, right? A whiskey that we generally know of as, I wrote the name down here and it got away from me. But they don't even sell it outside of Asia or Japan. And they do distinguish the difference between Asia and Japan because that's sort of the way they work. And by the way, if you want to try and find that Hibiki 17, like the Yamazaki 12 that won the award in 2003, you can still get a Yamazaki 12. I was going to say this is the whiskey to talk about today. But it's bloody hard to get, and it's $200, and it's a $40 whiskey, to be clear. It is a $40. It was $40 before it won the award. It should still be $40, but it's $200. And that Hibiki 17, which they stopped making in 2018, I was searching the rare whiskey sites to try and see if I could actually get a bottle of it. $700+ for a blended whiskey. Okay. And the Yamazaki 12 is very much a classic Scottish style whiskey made in Japan. It is purely malted barley, twice distilled, right? That's super conventional. They age in ex-bourbon casks, sherry casks, and Minunara oak casks. Now, we talked about that on the Japanese show as well. There is an oak from Japan. It's not good at making barrels, so it's expensive because it doesn't grow really long and straight like French oak does. But it does have its own unique flavor. A flavor literally is often coined as Japanese. So while 2003 was the first time that Suntory won these awards for Yamazaki, there are other distilleries like Hibiki and Hakushu have won many awards since. They are now just a major player in the world. They've won Distiller of the Year a few times. Like, it's a big deal. And Hibiki is also a very old whiskey. In some ways, it's older than a lot of the Yamazaki institutions because it is a blended whiskey, and blended whiskeys are simply easier to make. You take all of your specialty whiskeys and you combine that maybe don't sell it well. You combine together something that tastes good and you sell it, and it costs less to do that, right? And one of the examples, if you look over in Scotland, is the Glenturret, a distillery you've never heard of. And their single malts, not impressive, but it's the same company that makes Famous Grouse, right? Which is a grain whiskey that has Highland Park and Macallan in it. That's how they do their thing, right? And so the fact that they've kept all these different styles under one house is one of the things that made Suntory so resilient. And again, easy to hate on this company, but you remember that cool Maker's Mark small batch we had? That's because of Suntory, right? Suntory bought Maker's Mark and said, hey, you're not doing any rare, weird versions of your whiskey, and they make a lot of money. Go to it. And it was great. It was expensive.
You've given me a story that I've told several times now. This is probably my most retold Richard story.
of finding that special edition Maker's Mark?
I love it. I just love it because they're like, no, that's I just love they came in like, no, you're doing this thing. And now it's the biggest thing in the world, you know?
Yeah. And that's, the way it goes. So Hibiki has been made since the 80s. In fact, the original edition was from 1989, which was to commemorate Suntory's 90th anniversary, going back to the 1890s. Today, you can get a 100th anniversary edition of a blended whiskey for more than $100, if that inclines you. I think the Blossom edition is almost $200. And they use a lot of different whiskeys because they make so many. They're all Suntory whiskeys. So the major distilleries, Yamazaki, Hakushu, Chita, those are all involved. They have different barrelings. One of the barrelings that they use, and I've seen the special edition of this in the Hakushu distillery, they actually sell this as a separate single malt, is aged in umushu casks. And umushu is a Japanese plum liqueur. So they make grain alcohol, and then they soak these green underripe plums with sugar in them and make a kind of liqueur, and they age them in wood. And they now have been putting whiskey into those barrels for a certain amount of time, and then it imparts its own flavor. And the sort of traditional Hibiki Harmony, which was the replacement for their age Appellated versions like Hibiki 17 Blended, and there was a 21 as well, all of which are now off the market. The Harmony just means they don't put an age on it for a reason. There's some 5 and 6 year old in there, guaranteed, and nobody wants to buy that. So it's Harmony. The Harmony is, it costs us less to make this good tasting thing.
Not the harmony between the ages of the ingredients.
And that being said, Hibiki Harmony is disturbingly difficult to find. It is easier to find than most. You'll have to go into your liquor store. It is not always stocked. And it is selling for $100, which is a lot for a blended whiskey. It's good. Is it $100 good? That's tough. You know, at 40, this is a grabber. Like, you should have this on your shelf all the time. But at 100, it's a lot for a blended whiskey. 43%. Again, it's a blend, so it's got its own niceties to it. Like, for me, my go-to blend, there's a couple of go-to blends I keep on the shelf all the time. The Dewar's 12. I will always drink a Chivas as it's around, especially their 12. Famous Grouse. Right, those are my usual go-to blends. And Hibiki Harmony used to be, just not at $100. But there are inexpensive Japanese whiskeys. They're just not from any distiller you've ever heard of. Like, all of the known brands now have upscaled to the point where it's $100 plus bottles of whiskey.
Is this accessible in the U.S.? Like
the Hibiki Harmony?
No, the other Japanese.
The other way, yes. They're starting to show up more and more.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you go to a Total Wine or a BevMo or any of those kinds of sites and you search for Hibiki, they're going to throw a whole bunch of other whiskeys that they have at you for $40 and $50.
Because they know you're looking, yeah.
Because you're looking for Japanese. So, like, you're like, oh, you like that because you heard that name. Let me show you something you can actually, that we actually have. Because they often don't have this one, but you will find it. This one I still find around. This one is often on the bar. If you got a nice whiskey collection, you'll have a Harmony before you have any Yamazakis of any kind.
I have what I call a temporary whiskey collection.
All whiskey is temporary. So you're right.
Yeah.
Now, I've got, you know, with this new office, I've got the decanter out. There's Chivas Regal in it at the moment.
That's a good one. That way, you don't have to advertise it. If someone wants a glass, you pour it. They're happy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Also, the use of a decanter is something you should possibly talk about at some point.
Yeah, I got a nice decanter and glass set for Christmas a few years ago. It's Bohemian, and so it's a shame not to use it. Right,
I have an empty Louis XIII, you know, Remy Martin brandy bottle. That would make a nice decanter for something.
It would make a nice decanter.
It's beautiful, right?
Yeah.
But Lisa's a fan of really old Madeiras. She just got a few bottles of like 1968 Madeira. And I said, we'll put it in a decanter. We'll have the little glasses, the tray. She says, no. She uses a Coravan. And she says, I said, but it's already fortified. Yeah. You don't have to worry about it. She says, no. So, but I like the decanter. It's very, it's hospitality.
Well, that's her thing.
It's attractive. Like, it's
pretty.
Less,
you bring it out, people come and you pour it. They don't see the label. They don't, it's not about the label. It's about having a fine.
Obviously decanters exist because once upon a time you had to get your whiskey from barrels. And so, and that's my running joke. It's like civilized. You send your servant down to fill it.
Yes.
You're filtering out the wood chips.
Yeah. Yes. And bottles used to be very plain because bottles were expensive. So putting a decanter was nice. But today, like, I'm still in awe of that Bareface bottle with the slashes in it.
Oh, I love that.
Through the label.
Yeah,
so
that was
pretty.
Really
actually,
like,
this Hibiki Harmony.
That's attractive bottle.
It looks
attractive.
Like a decanter.
It really is.
It's got a glass stopper. It's very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is an attractive bottle. And for
is it $9,500 nice or $45 nice?
Well, you know, when they start making bottles this nice, you got to know they're charging too much for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the Louis XIII. Yeah. It's like a Lalique crystal bottle.
Sure. That's what got me with that Bareface. That's a $40 bottle of Canadian whiskey, and it's got a gorgeous bottle.
Yeah.
Or the Pendleton Rye. That Pendleton Rye bottle is
beautiful. I'm still trying to find that, by the way.
Just remember, you don't drink the bottle.
No, but you do admire it.
I'm going out tomorrow up to the, as we call it, the area, the big liquor store. and Pendleton is on my list. That's one of the things I'm going to try to find.
And I definitely, living up on the coast now, there's lots of places where I can get a Johnny Walker. And there's only one bigger liquor store down in, quote, the city in Seashell, which is a town of 10,000 people.
It helps to know that inexpensive, you know, whiskey can be good, and yes, and that you could walk in a place and you order, like, I'll order a Manhattan. They're like, is Maker's Mark good? I'm like, yep, it's fine. That's absolutely
Mark
fine.
Is for great.
It's perfect. Yep, it's great.
But
so, and everyone has it. You
is
know?
It that really, though, Richard, you just don't like the Japanese style that much? That's why you downgrade it?
I mean, I do find Japanese clinical in general, but I often like that too. My problem is the brands that have worked hard to be great have now gotten rid of all their reasonably priced product.
You're talking about as a kind of a, not to generalize the entire island or whatever, but they've studied whiskey and they're like, we're going to do this exactly right. And in that sense, they're not really innovating per se. They're just trying to come in at some preordained place.
I mean, I would argue that Suntory's past that now with them blending across, like bringing Ben Nevis into some of their versions of Yamazaki. Like, they are doing remarkable things. And that's one of the themes I wanted out of this particular story was, like, as much as I'm, you know, I haven't got a lot great to say about Diageo either, right? Or Pernod Ricard or any of these large, you know, booze companies. In a lot of ways, they're ripping the soul out of it. Like, we always love the few standalone distilleries that are left, that are still running their own show, you know, the Balvenies of the world, right? At the same time, I think Suntory made Mark better. Full stop.
Yeah, that's the story to me.
Yeah.
That they, right, this is a rare example of some giant conglomerate coming in, turning around a mom and pop store and doing something special. So you don't really see that a lot. You know?
Well, and that's giving them the budget to set up the space for a short run, right? To that a certain market's going to appeal, but it's going to raise the product overall for doing that. And that's, I think, a very interesting aspect of alcohol. Look,
right.
It does not cost $100 to make this blended whiskey. I bet you it
doesn't cost $1,000 to make an iPhone either, but you know, that's the
I wonder if the bottle doesn't cost more than the booze in it. But
it's a nice bottle.
But that would probably be a nice bottle. That would be good for olive oil. It'd be good for balsamic vinegar.
Well, you buy the bottle and you fill it with some other cheap stuff.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what Dvorak. Dvorak told me to
leave it out for
Louis the 13th. He said, "Just fill it with, you know, go down." He had a brandy.
I have a friend I hide whiskey from. Literally, I put whiskey away because I know he's just going to suck it down. You know, unthinkingly.
No. I think I showed you this, Paul. It's like I have three tiers of whiskey in the cabinet.
Yeah.
And there's stuff for people that's just drinking stuff. There's stuff. Oh, you like whiskey? Let me show you something interesting. And I usually
like, you're very interested in whiskey.
Yeah. I actually like you. Okay. Well, there's a whole other rack.
Nice. Nice. Yep.
I feel like I should like whiskey, but then I also think I don't really want to get that habit.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, you know, start with peanut butter.
There are way worse habits.
moving from Screwball, it's kind of a lateral move from there to,
I got enough problems with Instagram, late night Instagram. I'm not trying to get into anything extra.
What decanter is best for Screwball? It looks like a Mr. Peanut. You know, it's perfect.
It would be fun to have a shelf of commemorative whiskey.
Or just a peanut butter cup, in crystal. Yeah. A crystal peanut butter cup. What is this $5,500 charge, Leo? It's a crystal peanut butter cup.
Crystal peanut butter cup. What is?
It's what happens. Did it come with peanut butter cups? No, no, it was empty. You put whiskey in it.
Sure.
By
the way, I just want to point out, Paul, that I did install Arc. And that window is an Arc window floating on my Mac desktop. It's got
look at that.
It's got no
no adornment whatsoever. Adornment,
which I kind of like.
It's kind of beautiful.
It must be much further along in the Mac. It's been out. By the way, here's a fun little fact for you Apple folks out there. Even the Windows version is written in Swift.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
well, that's crazy.
I don't know of any other.
I'll tell you, I was not concerned about running this until Leo pulled it up.
Look, and I'm how like, pretty that
well,
is, right?
That is beautiful. That is simply beautiful.
Yeah, and it's on the Mac, I suspect it's much more mature. Like there's more, I think there's probably more features, et cetera, et cetera. But still, it's kind of an incredible thing.
That's really great.
Yeah. Except that I have no idea what to do now because I don't have any.
I know no one does. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And you can click on stuff, maybe delete something.
There's the sidebar. I don't know. I have to. I'll have to do some
You can
stuff.
Pin it if you want to keep it there.
No, right? Leo. Turn it off because what I really do want, in fact, if
is
I make
the minimalist.
This full, is the minimalist. This is great for the show. If I make it full screen, there's no extra.
Nothing.
And it's perfect for the show. So that's why actually I made this the default on this machine.
That's interesting.
And, because you can't even.
So had you used this before? Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, got on the list when it first came out.
So what do you think? What do you think of this?
You know, I try it again and again, and I'm trying to think of what the use case is for it. And so I'm going to, now that you've said I want to try devotedly, you know?
This is what I should have said earlier. I'm sorry. The problem with this product is we've been using web browsers for 20-something years. We have all these memory. We know how things work.
Yeah, we have
reflexes. This thing breaks like 50% of it. If you can get over that hump, and it's hard, I suspect, people listening to this show, I think technical people will love this.
Well, like I'm looking, where's my Bitwarden? I know I installed it.
I know. Oh, that's the worst part is extensions. There's no... The easiest, you can get them through the menu. There's an extension and then a sub menu, but it's a little ponderous, you know, they're trying to keep it minimalist.
Way, don't you think?
Maybe there is. I couldn't find it.
But I guess if you configure Bitwarden to autofill, then you wouldn't need to touch it.
I don't believe you can pin something where you can actually see that icon all the time. Like, I don't believe that's possible. I could be
wrong.
That's
their point is you don't want to, right?
Right. But I do want to, right? In this case, I mean, the truth is I do.
Like you, I'm very much used to it. This is just a window on the internet, window on the web.
I kind of love that. That really appeals to me.
Yeah, it's kind of
interesting. It is very interesting.
Less Chrome.
Like, I don't even know how to get back to the page I was on.
Less Chrome, literally.
Yeah. Beautiful, but difficult to use.
Exactly.
Yeah. Reminds me of
like
a super,
like a supermodel, difficult but beautiful.
But you know what's interesting is, in a way, it's also a throwback because it's keystroke driven, right? So it's a very simple, plain page.
Well, if you used to terminal listen, we're all doing text now with ChatGPT and everything. So this is it's coming back, baby.
You got to get that Bitwarden shortcut key nailed down, and you might be okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that might.
You just need the mouse to select the window, then you're done.
Yeah, and then you live in the keys. Look, every menu command has a keystroke. That's good, except for the extensions, but maybe you could add a keystroke.
I know the extension one. That's the one I can't figure out.
Needs a fix.
All right. Well, all I know is it's Centauri time.
It's always Centauri time.
Richard Campbell, runasradio.com. That's where Run As Radio lives. It's also where .NET Rocks lives. And we do have... an entire YouTube playlist of Richard's whiskey talk, which I don't promote enough. I really should mention that more often.
Every so often I send, it's like, you know, I took me 2.5 hours to explain Scottish whiskey.
Nice.
Yeah. And so it's divided into nice little chunks, which is good. You don't have to, you know, listen all at once. I think he's done a great job of it. And so.
Thank you.
I do too.
Yeah. I don't even know where it lives, to be honest. I don't.
It's a Club Twit thing, right? Or is it just
it's on Twitter.
It's on YouTube. Let me look. Here's the YouTube page.
It's just probably just a playlist off of the normal Twit channel.
Yeah, I guess. I'm trying to see where it's the Twit Podcast Network. So if you go to youtube.com/Twit, there it is. Okay.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/Twit, you will then see Windows Whiskey, which is a playlist that Kevin King did this. Right. A really nice job.
Kevin did all the work on this.
It took all of the little bits from all of the shows, 23 of them.
I like it.
Starting.
Somebody asked me about Pocino the other day, and I just was able to point them to that clip.
This is there you go.
There's Pocino.
Thank you for doing this, Kevin. This is really nice. Yeah.
Ton of work.
So it starts with barley. And it ends with
the original eight. Yeah, the original eight was the making of the whiskey. And then we went in.
Just like
the Japanese is in there.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole Japanese thing. You got barley, malting, milling, mashing, fermentation, distillation, barreling, bottling, bourbon. That's the first nine. Number 10 is Japanese. Then Irish, then Canadian. This is great. And then you go to individual picks. Really, really nice. Thank you, Kevin, for doing that. And of course, while you're at youtube.com/twit, you'll also see that we have a live stream of the shows as we're, like now, recording them. So people want to watch live, club member or not, you can do it. Of course, club members get to watch before and after the shows. They get a lot of other benefits as well. So thank you to our club members because they really support this. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. that's become a premium member because that's really, there's some great stuff behind the premium paywall. Of course, most of the stuff's in public. And his book, two books, actually, Field Guide to Windows 11, including Windows 10, and the brand new one, Windows Everywhere, which is kind of the history of Windows through its programming languages, is those are both available at leanpub.com.
Yeah.
You're going to Mexico soon, Paul? Pretty soon?
Yeah, a week from Saturday or Friday.
Okay. So one more show.
Third.
Mukunji.
Yeah, that'll be
it. And then the weather will turn. And Richard, sure you're headed out. Where are you going?
I'll be in London next week. So I've got my usual little recording room in the Queen Elizabeth Convention Center. So I will have a nice view of Westminster Abbey.
Nice.
And a good spot to record. I'll bring the little swing camera so I can show you the view. But we'll get it. We'll shoot it from there. It'll be, of course, evening in London.
But jolly old.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go make a trip to World of Whiskey and grab myself a Flora and Fauna bottling, something weird.
Good.
You know, a Daluane or Blair Atoll. It was on my radar. It's like, I got an excuse. And that's also a whiskey I can finish in 3 days. So,
yeah. Is there a whiskey you can't finish in 3 days? I was curious.
Try to drink a whole bottle of Froy. Like, that's just a lot of, that's a lot of ashtray, man. That's tough.
No way.
What else? Oh, we do this show on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1900 UTC. That's when you can watch the YouTube live stream. After the fact, though, and that's probably a lot easier for your life, busy lifestyle, go to twit.tv/ww for current and past episodes. Or the YouTube channel. There's one dedicated to Windows Weekly. Or subscribe, really. That's the best thing to do on your favorite podcast client and then get it automatically. As soon as we're done putting it together on a Wednesday. Did I say Tuesday? It's Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. I don't know.
Who can tell anymore?
Who knows anymore? I've had a little bit of that hibiki. I don't care. I'm going to go order another thermometer.
Yep.
thank you, Paul. Thank you, Richard. Thanks to all of our Windows winners and dozers. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here. In case you hadn't heard, Home Theater Geeks is back. Each week, I bring you the latest audio-video news, tips and tricks to get the most out of your AV system, product reviews, and more. You can enjoy Home Theater Geeks only if you're a member of Club Twit, which costs $7 a month, or you can subscribe to Home Theater Geeks by itself for only $2.99 a month. I hope you'll join me for a weekly dose of Home Theater Geekitude.